This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He has dropped. It is Lorenzo Alexander. Oh, baby, what a hit. Fire to the far sideline. It is picked off. It is intercepted. It is picked off. Stephon Gilmore.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the John Murphy Show here on Buffalo Bills Radio on WGR Sports Radio 550 and on TV on MSG. Thanks a lot for joining us. My name is Sal Capaccio, filling in for Murph here again until the end of the week. My run here of 10 straight days is coming to a close, Donald. My co-host, Donald Jones, with me. Are you happy or sad about that? You better say the right thing here, pal.
I'm sad.
You got to think about that? You have to think?
No, I'm sad, man. It's going to be tough to see you leave, tough to see you walk out the door.
I'll be around, though. It's not like I'm going anywhere. Yeah. So, you know, I'll be accessible to you if you ever want to bring me on again. Murph will be back, though. That is good news for everybody out there. He is still enjoying a vacation for the rest of this week. He'll be back next week here on the John Murphy Show. A lot to get to today. We got a lot on the program coming your way. We're going to have a special guest coming up at 1 p.m., Paul Damowich, or Damowich, I think is how you say his name. He is from the Philadelphia Daily News, and he is a T.O. supporter. And he wrote a little bit about T.O. and not getting in the Hall of Fame. And Donald, you and I had some very poignant comments to the voters and about T.O. not making the Hall of Fame. We both agree with Paul. He's going to come on. But also just maybe a little more feel for how the process works, I think. Right. A lot of people are interested in how the process works. It's as I think athletes know all too well, a lot of people have a lot of critique or criticisms, but they don't really know how things go behind closed doors. It's like watching all 22. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I don't actually grade players, like articles afterwards, people grade players all the time, grade A, grade B. Donald, I don't do it because, quite frankly, I don't think it's fair to grade someone not knowing an assignment.
Right, that's the truth.
I don't know what the assignments are.
You don't know what I was supposed to do on this play. You don't know what, you know, when you watch the game film, and I get this when I watch games on TV and I hear a commentator say something, and I'm like, that's totally wrong. Like, how do you just say that player was supposed to do that, and the quarterback is right and the wide receiver is wrong? Maybe the quarterback was wrong. You don't know. You're sitting up in the box right now. You might think the quarterback is always right, but no, it's not like that all the time. You know, those guys are wrong too. So it's tough to grade a player when you don't know what that player is supposed to do on every single assignment. So I get where you're going with that.
Yeah, so, you know, that's why maybe having a guy like Paul on to tell us a little bit more about how it works – as far as the actual behind-the-doors voting, we'll give a little more insight and maybe more clarity and context to that as far as the Hall of Fame. But we'll still say that T.O. deserves to be in.
Yeah, I mean, he still deserves to be in. So if I had to give the Hall of Fame voters and writers a grade, they'd get an F right now because they suck.
Right.
I mean, like, the guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't care what your personal vendetta is. However many of those writers that are sitting in that room that didn't vote him in, you know, it's terrible, man. That guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. His numbers speak for itself. And until you can give a legitimate reason why he shouldn't be in, he should be in.
And I don't have one yet. Maybe Paul can tell us what some of the people have for their legitimate reasons, quote unquote. We're going to talk draft. We're going to start looking at the draft. We talked some free agency yesterday. We're going to start talking draft today. Todd McShay has his brand new mock draft out from ESPN.com, of course. His second mock, which is Todd McShay's 2.0, and he has the Buffalo Bills selecting. Can we do a drum roll? Ready? You hear that?
Wait.
You like that? I could do that. He has the Bills selecting wide receiver Mike Williams from Clemson. Mm-hmm. Josh Norris, very well respected, been on this program many times with you guys, from NBC and Roto World, has the Bills selecting Deshaun Watson, also from Clemson. But I want to focus more on the wide receiver part of this. And Mike Williams. And if that is okay with Bills fans, are you okay with taking a wide receiver at number 10 overall? 10th overall in the draft, are you okay with that? Now, Donald loves him some wide receivers. He played wide receiver in the NFL, so he knows how valuable and important wide receivers are, of course. But wide receivers in at number 10, especially for a team that just drafted a wide receiver in the top 10 and paid double for him, just 3 years ago, I think scares off some Bills fans. So we've already thrown it out as our Twitter poll. At John Murphy Show on Twitter. Are you okay? Would you be okay with the Bills selecting a wide receiver 10th overall? And so far, two-thirds of you, pretty much, have chimed in and said, yes, you are okay with the Bills selecting a wide receiver 10th overall. Now, we don't know what's going to happen with Tyrod Taylor. Let's say the Bills, you know, move on from him, and quarterback is a need. Does that get you off that spot? I don't know. But really, the overall point here is I've heard a lot of people, Donald, debate whether or not wide receiver in this league today, the way it is, and you can get guys who can play that spot later in the draft, that's the argument. That's the devil's advocate of why you don't. Look, there's lots and lots of wide receivers in this league who are very good, who did not come in the first round. And the way that teams use spread offenses and you need four or even five wide receivers now on your team to complement each other, you don't need a number 10 overall pick. You can find one later because you're going to have to get a bunch of them anyway, and that's how you play football in today's NFL. So it's interesting to see 63% of you already saying, yes, you're okay with it, when I do think there's a good argument to be made against it. What's your thoughts? Number 10 overall, given today's football and the way it's played and how wide receivers can seemingly come from all different rounds. What was Antonio Brown, a third-round pick?
He was later than anybody, even like fifth or sixth.
Fifth or sixth, right? Yeah. So there you go. I mean, you look at guys like that, middle rounds, they can become really, really good players. Mm-hmm. On the other side, you got Julio Jones. We'll go through some of the top 10 guys in a minute. I don't want to do that right now. Right. But are you okay with it in a vacuum?
You know, for me, I am okay with it if it's the right guy. The thing is, you never know who is the right guy. But at the end of the day, if you can find that guy, that Julio Jones, that Antonio Brown, that type of receiver, and he's coming to you at, you know, in the top 10, these guys like Odell Beckham, these top receivers, game changers, you know, I think you got to take that guy, you know.
And because Beckham was 12, though. Beckham was 12.
Yeah, right? I'm just saying, if you could get him, these game-changing types of receivers, you have to take those guys because if you watch them go to somebody else, you might regret it, you know. And you always need a game-changing wide receiver. Now, we know today's game, there are always a bunch of wide receivers on the field, but you still need to have that one game changer, that guy that you know if you throw it up to him, he's going to catch it, or he can just take the top off the defense all the time. So I'm okay with having a wide receiver at the number 10 pick. I'm not okay with Mike Williams, though.
Okay, I want to get into that one second. One second, because here's the other argument against the Bills. Now, this is a Bills-specific question, of course. The Bills already have that guy.
Mm-hmm.
They have Sammy Watkins.
The problem
essentially, if you take a wide receiver at 10, Donald, he's your number two guy.
Right.
A wide receiver at 10 should be your number one franchise wide receiver mm-hmm. for the next 10 years. You're hoping that's Sammy Watkins. If Sammy Watkins is, if he does stay healthy, and he is your wide receiver going forward for the next 10 years,
mm-hmm.
then that number 10 wide receiver is getting number two targets.
Yeah.
I think that becomes a little problematic for me.
I mean, it could definitely be problematic. Look at the Giants, though. You know, now,
sure.
Shepard wasn't a top 10 pick, but just look at what they had at wide receiver with Odell, Shepard, and Victor Cruz, who can still, you know, get it done in the middle. You want to have those playmakers on the outside, especially for a quarterback like Tyrod Taylor, who needs playmakers around him, you know. So, for me, I'm okay with taking a wide receiver at that position. I just don't like it to be Mike Williams, and we'll talk about that in a second. Yep. But
we'll break them down because him and Corey Davis are the two top guys mm-hmm. At the position. Here are, if we can throw up on the screen, and I'll read them off here on radio. Here are the wide receivers who have been chosen in the top 10 of the draft of the past 10 years. All right. And actually, we're going to do that in a little while. We'll show everybody in a little while, but we'll go through that. There have been 12 of them who have been chosen. We'll go through them. I'll read a few of them off that have been terrific, though. Calvin Johnson,
mm-hmm.
Julio Jones, AJ Green, Mike Evans, Amari Cooper, and even Sammy Watkins to a lesser degree because of injuries. There's a pretty good list there of guys that if you hit on them, but there have also been guys that you would not take number 10 overall
right.
or in the top 10, like a Ted Ginn, like a Darius Heyward-Bey, who never panned out, like a Justin Blackmon, who obviously had a lot of legal issues and suspended and stuff like that. And I don't know if you can control that. He may have been a top 10 type of talent. But I do think, Donald, I'll say this. I think the rate of wide receivers who hit at the top, if you know, they're pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
Generally, if you know a guy's going to be a stud and you take him top 10, I think wide receiver is a spot where you're not going to miss as much as quarterback, for example,
right,
or even offensive lineman.
You know, wide receiver, you can see the studs out there. But like you said, there are some guys that you're like, that dude is not a top 10 pick. You
right.
know? Like for me, Mike Williams is just not a top 10 pick.
What does he do? What does he not do for you?
He doesn't separate.
He doesn't.
He does not separate from the
You
DBs.
Need to have one at top 10?
Yes, you need to have – even Julio Jones can separate from
right.
guys. You know, now he can run straight and catch the ball over people, but he can separate from a wide receiver. And Mike Williams just doesn't do that. You know, like he runs down the field, the DB is right with him, he can jump over everybody in college.
Right.
You can't just jump over everybody in the NFL.
No.
It doesn't work like that. You have to be able to separate from the DBs. And so for me, because of that, he's not a top 10 pick. He should go, you know, in the teens, later in the 20s or something like that. For the rest of the guys that you just named, though, Calvin Johnson and Julio Jones and those types of guys are difference makers. As big as they are, those guys know how to run routes. They can separate. They are crazy fast. So these guys are not running, you know, 4.5, 4.6. They're running 4.3,
right,
low 4.4, you know. So that's a difference maker for you, a guy that can jump 40 inches and run 4.4 and is standing at, what, 6'3", 6'4", that is a difference maker, you know. So you need to – if you have a chance to take that guy, you got to take that guy.
I have a few tweets that have come in on this. One says, I vote no because the last three Clemson picks haven't worked out so well. First of all, that is Muma. Muma. All right, look, I get it, but that is not a reason not to take someone. You never know. I mean, just because a Cal quarterback didn't work out in 1990 whatever doesn't mean you'll take Aaron Rodgers from
right.
Cal, right? I mean, I get it. I understand that, but where a guy went to school, but I'm not so sure that person's not being sarcastic anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That should not be a reason why. And by the way, I would disagree with that. The last three Clemson picks haven't worked out so well. Who? Sammy and Shaq?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that. Shaq Lawson was pretty darn good when he actually played last year.
Yeah.
He was hurt, and he's only played a handful of games. And Sammy Watkins has been extremely good, but he's been hurt. That's obviously the problem.
So, I mean, you can't say that they haven't panned out. You can say these guys haven't been able to stay healthy.
That's right.
Which, in the long term,
and maybe
if
not
they
even
never
fair
can
for
stay
Shaq
healthy.
Yet.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's
right?
his first year.
Right.
Like he was hurt really coming out of college, so it's not really fair to him. Sammy, you need Sammy to be healthy.
Right.
You know, if Sammy goes through another year like he did this year with that foot, you will start to question if he's your guy going forward. Right. So when you have those types of injury questions with Sammy Watkins, yeah, you probably should be thinking about taking another wide receiver, you know, just because he hasn't been able to stay on the field for you, and you need a guy to stay on the field for you.
This one comes from Anthony. I'm just saying they definitely should. I think he's the best veteran. Oh, actually, this is responding to a earlier question, but here's one from Skywalker. Dear God, yes, they should take one at number 10 if they have a chance. And then how about this from Mark Doyle? Mark, good tweet here, but I want to explain this. I think this is a good subject to kind of broach here.
Okay.
He says, Donald, what good would it be for the Bills to draft another wide receiver if we don't have a QB who can get them the ball?
What are we talking about?
But you're talking about 10 years. You're not. The draft is about the future.
Right.
Are you saying you'll never have a wide receiver over the next or quarterback over the next 10 years? Maybe. I hope that's not the case. The plan would be to hopefully have a quarterback at some point to get him the ball.
You know, the thing is, Tyrod Taylor can get him the ball.
That's right.
He can get him the ball. The fact of the matter is that he didn't have anybody to get the ball to this year. So he didn't trust anybody to get them the ball.
And a run-heavy offense, too.
Right, in a run-heavy offense. And so does he need to improve in the passing game and the timing and all of that stuff? Yes, he does. But that guy can get you the ball. He could get any receiver the ball down the field, you know, hopefully going over the middle of the field. He can get better at that. Stop routes, all of that stuff. He can get you the ball. It's just a point of having the guys around him on the field, you know, on a consistent basis to get the ball to.
Let's take your phone calls on this. Is wide receiver at number 10, is that a good spot for wide receiver? So let me rephrase the exact way we have the poll question. Are you okay with the Bills selecting a wide receiver 10th overall in this year's draft? Todd McShay has his mock draft 2.0 out, and he has the Bills selecting wide receiver Mike Williams of Clemson. 803-0550, 888-552-550. Let's go to Ron in Lackawanna. Ron, what do you say?
Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
My mock draft, the number 10 spot, I've got the Rodgers linebacker from Alabama.
Ruben or Foster?
Defensive lineman from Stanford at number 10.
Solomon and Foster. I got you. But what about wide receiver at 10? What if the Bills did that? Would you be okay with a wide receiver at 10?
Spot. I don't, with the way we ran the ball last year, I want to build this defense and keep the running game going the way it was last year. And I think we can get in the playoffs with Tyrod and the running game and a better defense next year. That's how I feel.
All right. Thank you very much. I don't know, Don. What do you think? Concentrate on defense in the 10 pick.
It's okay with me if you go defense, if you go with like a safety. Linebacker, I don't know if you need to take it that pick, you know, but if you go with like a safety or even corner, I don't know. But I think safety is a need, right? So if you take a safety at number 10 and then you decide to take wide receivers in the second, third, fourth round, that's fine because you're going to be able to find wide receivers later in the draft that are going to pan out. They're going to be good wide receivers in this game, in this league for some time, you know. That's just how the wide receiver position is. You can find guys that are undrafted that can play a long time in this league. So if you decide early you want to go defense, yeah, that's fine. But you still need to get wide receivers on this team. You can't just say last year the running offense was good, so we need to just keep it that way and work on the defense. No, you got to get better at passing the ball, you know. So you have to improve everywhere. Yes, the defense is probably the main reason why this team wasn't in the playoffs. Just put it out there.
Right.
For me. But you still have to improve your passing game along with improving the defense.
803-0550, 888-552-550. Is wide receiver at number 10 okay with you if the Bills go that route? We have some open phone lines. Jump on right now. Pat in Niagara Falls did just that. What's going on, Pat?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Just an opinion. Usually my opinions are awful, so I'll accept the beating later on. But I don't think anybody pending this combine, I don't see anybody really stands out that is really worth saying, oh, my God, we have to get him. What are the chances of Buffalo actually trading their number 10 pick and actually concentrating on the open market and maybe furthering a wide receiver overall or just looking at other key areas that need fixing? But I really just don't see it yet that, oh, my God, we got to trade up or go get this guy in this draft.
Are you advocating trading 10 going down, you mean, and getting more picks?
Yeah, or even future picks down the line. Like you guys said, the draft picks are for the future, and, hey, maybe not take the – hate saying this, but take the New England approach. I don't know.
I understand. I mean, New England's in a better spot. They have a better roster, and they have a quarterback that allows you to do things like that. But it's a great question, and let me address what I think about that. First of all, here, Pat, thanks for the phone call. I don't think the Bills should trade up at all.
No.
All right? And there's a report out there, by the way, from the Sporting News. It was written today, and the gentleman who wrote it, I got to go back and look exactly who it was, says – if there's any team he think could trade up, it would be the Bills to look for that quarterback like a Trubisky. I hope the Bills don't do that.
Right.
I don't think that's the answer. I wouldn't do that. I'm always, in this day and age, an advocate for trading down because I think you can collect more good talent that way, Donald, and you give yourself more chances. But here's the thing. At number 10, you're going to get a pretty much elite player. You should. You should get a guy that's a really, really darn good football player to fit on your team. It's hard for me sometimes to justify not having that. You got to get good football players in this league to win. 10 is a good spot to get a good football player.
It is. 10 is a good
spot. Regardless of what position.
I mean, trading down, if you want to stockpile picks, you know, I totally get that. I do. But like you said, this team needs playmakers, and they need playmakers on both sides of the ball. For me, this team needs a safety, you know, and there's some pretty good safeties that you could take at the number 10 spot, you know.
Yes.
So for me, trading down and stockpiling picks, you know, that works, but I don't think this team is in a position to do that. New England, who the caller referenced there, is in a better position to trade down, trade back, and get more picks just because they have that quarterback.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
They have guys on their team already. This team is trying to build from a foundation, and
That's right.
You have to take the elite talent when you have a chance.
It's what we said a little bit earlier in the week. Yeah, they have really good players in New England. I could get it. They have a lot of spots where they have really good players. But generally around the roster, they have a lot of interchangeable parts because they have Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. And he makes everything else possible to do that. That's just the way of it, and that's just the fact. So the Sporting News, the person who wrote the article is Eric Galco. And Eric Galco wrote, I'll read you this from his article. He says, North Carolina's Mitch Trubisky could go first overall. Doesn't think he'll go to Cleveland. Bears may be a fit, but he says, quote, the team to watch out for is the Buffalo Bills. If I had to predict one team to make a Goff-Wentz trade-up, it would be the Bills this year. Cleveland will be all years when it comes to trading down from number one overall. I say I hope the Bills don't do that. I don't want to trade up to number one to grab a quarterback. The only way that I would at least even entertain it is if Doug Whaley told me and said to everybody here, We just really believe this guy is absolutely a stud for the next 15 years. And he's,
right.
That's how we evaluate him. And we've done all the research on this and think this is a can't-miss guy. Because I don't think any quarterback in this draft is worth that, A. And secondly, Donald, to move up from 10 to 1, you're probably giving up – you're giving up 10, of course. You're giving up probably next year's number 1 and either this year or next year's number 2 along with it.
Right.
I mean, that's probably what's going to cost you. Too much for me to do.
For me, you look at a guy – the guy who – just won the national championship, a guy who was in the Heisman running, 2 years in a row.
Deshaun Watson.
Had great games against the best defense in college football. People don't even know if he should go in the first round.
Great point.
You know, so if you had that guy who was really the best quarterback in college football, you don't know if he should go in the first round or not. That tells you everything about this class. It tells you everything about this QB class. You know, I think they have him like ranked third in the QBs coming out behind Trubisky and Kaiser out of Notre Dame.
You know what's funny is this quarterback class, I think most people, you could put Mahomes in the group, but most people believe the top three are Trubisky and Kaiser and Watson, but in no particular order.
Right.
Every person has their own flair and own order for that. You may have Watson followed by Trubisky, then Kaiser. I've seen Kaiser number one. As far as quarterback class is concerned, that's what's interesting about this. But wide receivers, where we're focusing on, and I want to take a look at that graphic on the TV side that I told you about earlier, and I want to read you the top 10 wide receivers that have been taken over the past 10 years. So these are wide receivers taken in the top 10 in the past 10 years. Look at that screen right there, and here they are. 2015, you had two, Amari Cooper and Kevin White. I'd say one for two there, right? Kevin White hasn't played yet. He's been hurt.
Right.
So we'll see what happens there. It's been two seasons. 2014, Mike Evans, Sammy Watkins, same deal. Mike Evans has had a terrific career so far. Sammy has been good when he's been on the field, justifying that if he plays, but he hasn't played enough to justify that.
Right.
2013, Tavon Austin, that not worth it to me, Don.
No,
a wasn't. Nice player, not and a top 10 player.
Not a top 10 player, and it definitely wasn't worth them extending him and giving him the money they gave him.
I agree with that. He's a gadget player to me. Justin Blackmon in 2012, we all know that wasn't worth it considering his troubles. In 2011, he had two studs. Fourth is A.J. Green. Sixth is Julio Jones. In 2009, Michael Crabtree, who now finally is having a rejuvenation of his career. I still don't think he was ever worth a top 10 now looking back, but at least you could justify a little bit more having him near the top. Darius Heyward-Bey, no. Ted Ginn, no. And, of course, Calvin Johnson, yes. Future Hall of Famer, I hope.
Crabtree? Maybe, hold on. Did you say Crabtree?
Crabtree, that's the guy I said has a rejuvenation.
Right, maybe.
If you look back now, you say, no, not top 10, but maybe first round worthy.
Yeah, first round worthy. Later in the first
round. Not top 10. Not top 10.
And then he holed out like something crazy that year, right?
Right.
He held out to like into the season, I believe.
So let's say how many on this list, Donald, on this list, let's count how many have been actually worth it that we can agree on. Top 10. Cooper, yes.
Half the list.
Evans, yes.
Evans.
Green,
Jones,
and Johnson.
And Johnson.
Okay, I think Sammy's right on the fringe because of his health, right? And
Sammy shows flashes. You know, when he's on the field, he makes plays. And it's like, wow, like this is why you need this guy on the
field.
That's
right.
But you got to be on the field, you know, so you just don't know with him yet.
No doubt about it. So I think five have been absolute hits. One is possibly still going to be a hit, and maybe two with Kevin White if he can stay healthy because we haven't seen that from him either.
Right.
But that's five out of the 10. I don't think that that's I don't think that's something you should really bank on being somebody but I do think that they have generally had a higher rate with looking at those guys who have been studs. If you take him at top 10, those guys are studs, the one we say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Cooper, like a Jones, like a Green. I mean, man,
those are
the best
Calvin
guys
Johnson
in their position.
Was a stud.
Yes. No doubt. It's kind of like Feast or Famine on that list.
Yeah. It is. It is Feast or Famine, but it's Feast or Famine at any position in this in this league, you know, when you're talking about the draft, you just don't know. How many quarterbacks, if you could bring up a list of quarterbacks that have gone in the top 10 in the last 10 to 15 years, how many of those guys, or even just in the first round, how many of those guys have panned out? You know, it's not
as many,
be many,
not nearly as many. Quarterbacks have been way tougher.
Right. You know, so and it's every across the board, though, running backs, linemen, defensive players, defensive backs, guys just don't pan out. They look so good in college. And it's like, man, this guy is a lock. I'm telling you, he's going to be a beast in the NFL. And when they get here, it's just a totally different game. They can't transition to the NFL game, or they get money right away, and you know their drive isn't there like it should be. You know, so for me, you got to go with the talent, and you just have to hope that the guy that you're taking has the right mentality that when he gets a little bit of money because he's going top 10. That he's not going to just say, okay, I got paid now, and this is all I care about.
Right.
You know, and that's that goes to your scouting department and the interview process and all of that stuff. But I still don't think that you trade back because the team's just not in a position to trade back. Now, I was looking, the Bills only have 6 picks, right? So I can understand the argument. Like, you need to
get some more picks. Yeah. The reason they only have 6, by the way, they do not have a 4th rounder due to the trade for last year, Reggie Ragland. And then they also are void of a 7th rounder, I think it was the Matt Castle trade, but the 5th came back. They got an extra 5th, but no 7th. I think that's how it works this year in the draft. But we'll see. We got more of your phone calls. Now you're starting to light them up, so we'll get to them when we come back. Donald Jones with me, Sal Capaccio. Are you okay with the Bills taking a wide receiver 10th overall in this year's draft? He'd be the number 2 guy coming in. You'd be spending a lot, but there are some talented guys. And the guy that we both like, we haven't even touched on, Corey Davis. What if it's him? Does that change the equation? Ooh. More on the John Murphy Show coming up next here on WGR and MSG.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Sal Capaccio here with Donald Jones. Don't forget, Paul Domowicz from the Philadelphia Daily News is going to join us here at 1 o'clock to talk about the vote of the Hall of Fame and Terrell Owens not getting in. Hey, you follow this thing the last few years, that all the Harambee stuff that's around there, all these people, how crazy they are about Harambee, the gorilla that got shot, right?
Mm-hmm. And now they got an emoji.
But they really have an emoji now, too?
Yes.
A Harambee emoji? I've seen people with jerseys with his name on it. Okay. But here's the latest. You ready? I just read this today. Okay. Somebody was eating a bag of Cheetos and found a Cheeto that was shaped like Harambee. Like, actually looked like him, like, climbing a tree or something. They took that Cheeto, put it on eBay, and got nearly $100,000 for it.
Really?
For a Cheeto.
For a Cheeto.
That looked like Harambee.
I mean, who paid for that?
I have no idea. Now,
like,
I didn't
have the money to just throw away $100,000 to pay for something like that.
Oh, it's Harambee? It's not Harambee?
It's Harambee, yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm saying it wrong. I don't even know.
Yeah, he just said that in my ear as well.
I know. I didn't know that either. I always thought it was Harambee. Harambee. Sorry.
Thanks, Jay.
Jay Harris telling us. But either way, Harambee, Cheeto, that looks like him, going for nearly $100,000. It's not about who could pay for it either. I've read that sometimes these bids are fake. Like, how does that happen? Do the people, like, inflate the bids on there and they say, like, oh, this is what the bid is?
Probably.
I don't know.
Probably to get somebody to bite and bid higher and actually give you the money.
Right, exactly. We'll see, though. I don't know. Maybe it's one of our callers.
For a Cheeto?
Maybe it's one of our callers. I can't believe it. So,
if we have
Harambee.
A caller that has
I thought
the
it was
Harambee.
I'm sorry.
If we have a caller that has the money to do that,
yeah, I know. That'd be.
I need to meet this person.
No doubt about it. Let's go to PJ, who is in the Bronx. Hi, PJ.
How you doing, guys?
I'm good, thanks.
Everything all right?
Yeah, pretty good. We're just talking about Cheetos that go for $100,000. That's all.
That was insane. Just listening to that story. That's why I listen to you guys. I'm a mailman in the Bronx, and you guys get me through every day. And I just got to say before I say my point, Sal, you're elite. You could do it in any media field. You're elite. That's why I listen to you guys, and I listen to you guys on the speaker. So when people hear me out in the Bronx, they know there's other people out there like you.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
Going on to the wide receiver, the sexy, splashy pick will probably be a wide receiver, but I agree with you, Sal, because I think we can sign someone, one of the two receivers that we got, like either Goodwin or Woods, one of the two, and then probably do an upgrade. I don't know what he's going to command, but Terrell Pryor from Cleveland would definitely help us out. And I don't know what he's going to command, but what he did with the numerous quarterbacks that he had on his team and had a 1,000-yard season, who knows what he could do here, and he's versatile. He could be used in many ways. Plus, that pick is just too important, so I would veer off from wide receiver and try to address something more important. Like I said, free agency will tell what we go after.
Yep.
The 10th pick, so free agency is going to dictate what we do, but I would shy away from that. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it as well, PJ, and you know, thanks for all their hard work through rain or sleet or snow delivering us all of our mail.
I have a friend who delivered mail. And he used to tell me stories about being chased by dogs.
I can imagine.
And all types of stuff. And I just laugh at now he's
oh
a cop.
Oh, my gosh.
Now he's a cop, so he's chasing other people. But, you know, I'm like, wow. He used to tell me how many the hours that they work and everything. I'm like, wow. That's
I know,
crazy.
Right? It is interesting. But here's the thing about what he said. And, yes, we all know that. Free agency comes first.
Mm-hmm.
We will know more of the Bills' plan as far as what their holes are after free agency.
Right.
It's fun to talk about now, but you're right about that, PJ. And Donald, on the heels of that, the Bills have a lot of free agent wide receivers.
A lot of free agents. Four of them. Yes. Four of them to be exact.
So the Bills only have locked up next year four receivers. In fact, they have, I think, three, in fact. I'm sorry. That would be Sammy Watkins, Walter Powell, and Dez Lewis. Colby Liston be two, so four. That's it. Mm-hmm. The other four free agents are Goodwin, Hunter, Woods, and Tate. And we'll see where that goes.
I mean, you look at Robert Woods. We all know the money he's going to command. Yep. Are you ready to spend that money?
No.
Marquise Goodwin, I think, is a guy you can probably bring back.
And I think they want
gonna,
to.
Yeah, he's mm-hmm. not going to command a lot of money. And he's a guy who can take the top off your defense, score a couple of touchdowns for you year in and year out. Now, he has to be a little bit more healthy. The concussions can be a concern, mm-hmm. right? Justin Hunter is a guy who, you know, he scores touchdowns for you. He can be a huge red zone threat. He's not going to command a lot of money. So, yeah, Brandon Tate, I think you have to bring him back. Like, at the kick return position, he's just too good at it. You know, he's been good at it for a while now. So, hopefully, that doesn't diminish his skill set as far as kick return goes. I think he's a guy you got to bring back. But he's not going to be your, you know, three or four wide receiver. He's probably just going to be your kick return specialist, right? So, for me, Marquise, Justin Hunter, you need to bring back. But you need to bring in a couple of guys. I don't think you're going to be – I don't know if you'll be able to bring back Robert Woods. So you're going to need to bring in
– I don't think you can.
A veteran.
Or should for that money.
Right, for that money. You need to bring in a younger veteran, so somebody who's 5-6 years in, knows what they're doing, savvy, can get open, you know, all the time. And then you probably need to draft one. You know, you need to draft one. And I'm not saying you need to go number 10. You can find wide receivers – at any point in the draft, but you need to bring in a couple of wide receivers here because you need playmakers around Tyrod Taylor so that he's comfortable.
Or whoever the quarterback is.
Whoever the quarterback is, you need playmakers so that they're comfortable and they can get the ball around to everybody. So for me, man, the wide receiver position is tough, man. It's tough here just because there are so many guys. And Robert Woods, I would love to have him on this team. I just don't think you can give him that money.
Robert Woods, in a lot of ways, is like Stephon Gilmore for me.
Mm-hmm.
Really good player. You'd like to have him. He fits in.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't pay him what he's going to command on the open market.
Right.
I'm sorry.
And somebody's going to pay him.
And I said that about Gilmore yesterday. I cannot, in good conscience, give Stephon Gilmore top five corner money, $14 million a year, let's say.
Right.
And I can't pay Robert Woods essentially what's going to be number one wide receiver money on the open market from someone. Mm-hmm. He could go to a team like San Francisco or L.A. back on the West Coast where he's from. He could get number one wide receiver type money, $9 million a year, let's say. The Bills can't do that and then also extend Sammy, which they're going to want to do at some point, provided he stays healthy.
Right.
That's why you have the discussion of getting a younger guy who could do exactly what Robert Woods might be able to do for you at a rookie type of contract.
At a rookie type of contract.
And that's where the discussion comes in.
So you're talking about if you go at number 10, you're drafting a guy who essentially is your number one wide receiver, right? Just not knowing what Sammy Watkins.
Right.
But if you go number 10, those usually are your starters, your number one guys,
yep.
right? Your top 10 picks. If you get a guy in the second, third, fourth, or even later, you know, you can find a solid number two, number three wide receiver in those rounds. So for me, I mean, that top 10 pick should be a defensive pick. It should be like a safety or something because we need safety play. We really do need – we don't know what's going to happen with Aaron. You don't know how long Corey Graham has to play. And so at some point, you're going to have to address that position. It needs to be now.
And there's good safeties.
It's good safeties, right.
Adams and Hooker are the two guys most likely in the top 10 that would go in that area. But wide receiver – go ahead, I'm sorry.
Wide receiver and running back. Like, running back position is another position where you can get guys at any point in the draft.
Yeah.
And you can get solid guys. You know, wide receiver is that way. You can get a guy later. You can get a guy undrafted that can end up being your number two wide receiver. You just don't know.
You know what's funny about that is this is going to be a draft this year. You're going to get a few, probably at least two, maybe three, even four running backs in the first round, which is, to me, I don't know. You don't do that in today's league. I agree with you. But your Fournette's going to go and Dalvin Cook's going to go. There's going to be the kid from Tennessee is going to go. You're going to possibly – you're going to get maybe Christian McCaffrey.
See, I don't like Christian McCaffrey, man. I love to watch him play in college. But he's one of those gadget players that I don't see him being a solid NFL player. Like, where are you going to put him in the NFL? He's not going to be able to run between the tackles. He can catch the pass out to the backfield, and you can line him up in the slot. But that's Tavon Austin right there, you know? So I just don't
– He could be a James White type player, like for New England, right?
Yeah.
But first round? But do you take a first rounder on a guy like that? I don't know.
Right. You know, you can find those guys later in the draft. Guys who can catch and guys who can line up in the slot. You can find them anywhere.
Let's go to Dave in West Seneca. Hi, Dave. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Thank you.
Well, I'm saying the only way the Bills go defense is if somehow Malik Hooker or Jamal Adams somehow falls to us. I don't want really go to Jabril Pepper style. I don't think that's really the way I want to go. The way I'd want to go is certainly Corey Davis, man. He's definitely the guy. He knows how to block, I would believe, in the run game. You could definitely, if not, you could teach him. He's a big boy, you know. So that's just what I have to say about that.
All right, I appreciate it. Good segue, because Donald and I both love Corey Davis. I think you do from talking with you. I know you know I do. I think Corey Davis, to me, is the number one wide receiver in this class. And I like Mike Williams. Mm-hmm. So that's saying a lot about Corey Davis. I think he's going to be a stud. I think he is going to come right into this league and do pretty well, but have a nice long career, provided he stays healthy, and be a legitimate number one type wide receiver for many years for some team. I think he runs excellent routes. He's incredible after the catch. It might be mm-hmm. his best trade overall. He's got speed, maybe not the top end speed like some of these guys. Like, he's not like a Goodwin type speed, right. but he's fast he's and he fast. Can run. The only question you have with him, Donald, is he did it in the MAC. Right. And he's going to be going against elite, you know, players as far as secondary players. But you know what? He did play a couple of those games from Western Michigan. He did play a couple of those games, including a bowl game, against really good D1 power conference defenses, and he still did pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, people question the whole conference and the level of play and all of that stuff. Man, there are good players all over this country. It doesn't matter if you come from D3, NAIA. Like, you're going to find guys that end up playing long careers, being starters in this league that come from a school you've never heard of, you know? So for me, that doesn't even matter to me where he played the MAC. You know, look at Khalil Mack himself, you know? So I think Corey Davis, to me, is a guy who can run routes. And the best thing, he attacks the ball in the air. But for me, the biggest trait that he has is run after the catch. Like, that guy can run after. He's like a running back when he gets the ball in his hands. And that is why, you know, people here don't like Jarvis Landry, because he would, you know, his hit on Aaron Williams. But that's Jarvis Landry's biggest trait to me. You know, he can run after. He's like a running back with the ball in his hands. And so I like that. I like that with Corey Davis, because he can get open. He can get separation. When he catches the ball, he can run after the catch. I don't see that in Mike Williams. I see Mike Williams being a big body, red zone target who can jump over guys, catch a few passes, jumping over corners and things like that. But I just don't see him going that early, because for me, he doesn't get the separation. He doesn't. That's all he can do is get down the field and jump over people. Right. You know, and it doesn't work like that in the NFL all the time.
803-0550-888-550-2550. Let's head out to Sean in Jersey. What's going on, Sean?
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Good, thank you.
All right. I wanted to chime in on the draft picks. I believe if you can take a first rounder with the guy Davis, I wouldn't take Williams with the first. Number one, I would try to trade back with either the Colts or the Eagles, because they're going to want either Cook or Fournette if they're still on the board, and we need as many draft picks as we can, and we don't have a whole lot of money to work with this offseason. And that would be the way that I would go after Corey Davis.
Yeah, he's not going to be there if you trade down, though. Corey Davis, I think, is going to go early. Somebody's somebody's going to take him. Somebody's going to want a wide receiver there. Tennessee at number 5 is where Todd McShay has him going, and then the Bills taking Mike Williams at 10. They don't even have a chance for him with the Bills at 10,
right,
according to McShay in his latest mock, of course.
And I think it's going to happen like that. I think Corey Davis at the end – we'll see how the combine goes. But if Corey Davis runs a good 40, and I don't see Mike Williams – I don't know how fast Mike Williams might be. He doesn't seem to have that top-end speed. But if Corey Davis gets in the 4.4s, I'm telling you, he's going to be the first receiver to go.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens at the Combine. The Combine is at the end of February, of course, in Indianapolis. All right, we're taking your phone calls on the Bills possibly selecting a wide receiver at number 10 overall. Good discussion, good phone calls. Keep them coming. Donald Jones with me, Sal Capaccio, filling in for Murph the rest of this week here on the John Murphy Show on WGR and MSG.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
803-0550, the number to call. 888-550-2550 if you're outside the Buffalo area. like Rick is in Colorado. Boy, we like to span the globe here, Donald. We really do. What's going on, Rick?
In Denver yesterday. It might have been 10
I know.
I hate to break it to you, buddy, but Colorado's not really global.
Well, you know, we like to say that anyway. Even though you're in Colorado, we might get. How do I know? Maybe you're in Colorado, Russia, for all I know. I don't know.
Is that a place?
Is that? I don't even know if that's a place. Sometimes you guys get snow like that. How is the weather right now?
Actually, it's beautiful. It's like 60 and sunny, and wow. But you know what? We get 3 feet of snow tomorrow.
I know, right? That's one of those areas for that.
Calm before the storm.
That's right. What's going on, brother?
Hey, so I'll tell you, the Bills have a – if they go to Mike Williams, that means we're re-signing Tyrod or we're going free agency. I doubt that we're going to be looking in the draft to find a quarterback that's going to be a day one starter for next year. But I'll tell you, the interesting choice that they're going to have is if Malik Hooker's sitting there with the need that we have at safety, and especially in this particular defense. So, you know, I'd be interested to hear your and Donald's impressions, especially on – so if we're evaluating – I know we talked about Tyrod yesterday, but if there's an evaluation going on with Tyrod, I mean, I saw the body language from the receivers on the missed throws and – you know, I'm not sure if the offense was set up where you sat in zones rather than, you know, trying to hit receivers on the run. But, you know, there are a lot of questions that I hope that they're going to the players because, let's face it, the coaches from last year are gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the players are the ones that are going to probably have a major input as far as, you know, whether they feel confident that he's the guy to go with.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know, but you're right about that. We'll know the direction, I think. You know, March 11th, we'll know. Here's what's going to happen, Donald, all right? March 11th, by that date, it could be before that, but by that date, we will know if Tyrod Taylor is going to be on the Bills roster in 2017 or he's not. If he is, no way do I say they're going to pick a quarterback number 10. They could because they feel they have to have him and somebody. I would be kind of okay with that. I just don't think they would do it.
If he's
not on the roster, absolutely in play is a quarterback at number 10, I think.
Yeah, if he's not on the roster, you'd have to think that quarterback is in play. Now, the question is, will a quarterback be there?
Right.
You know, will any the guy of those they want. Guys, because there's so many teams that need quarterback that go in the top 10 that they might end up snatching all those guys, you know? So you just don't know. But then at the same time, do you like any of those guys? Like, if quarterback is in play, do you decide that you need to take a quarterback just because Tyrod's not on the roster anymore? You might be reaching for a quarterback in this draft.
That's what happened in 2013.
Right. You know, so do you reach for one of these guys? I think that's what's going to happen. A lot of these teams are going to reach just because they need quarterbacks, and these are the only guys that are out there. For me, you still have to stick to your best, your need and the best players out there at the time, you know, and it's for me, it's going to be safety. I guess quarterback be in there, but they're not. None of those guys are in the top 10.
Only if they fit the value, I think. That's right.
If they fit the value, and they don't fit the value to me. So it would be safety or wide receiver. And for me, you have to go safety.
It goes back to, when I reference 2013, and what I mean is, and it goes back to people who've questioned, EJ is Doug Whaley's guy and draft pick and all that. It's pretty easy what happened in 2013. I've laid it out before, but I'll explain it again. Buddy Nix made it clear when he was going to leave this organization, I'm going to have a franchise quarterback in place before I leave here. He said that to Howard and Jeremy on the morning show on WGR. He said, when I leave here, I'm going to have a franchise quarterback in place. That was his last draft that he was a part of.
Right.
So he went into the draft and he told his personnel department, Doug Whaley included, find me the best quarterback in this class. Find me the best quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So they identified, whether it was Whaley and Jim Monas and Kelvin Fisher and all those guys that work on that, they identified E.J. Manuel as the best quarterback of the 2013 draft. And Buddy Nix said, that's who I'm taking in the first round. Now, they traded down a little bit. They went from 9 to 13. They wound up taking him. But that's why, 13 I think it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
They, 16 maybe, whatever the number was, they take him. But that's what it was. Because he said, I'm taking a quarterback. What the funny part about the thing that'll make you drive your head off the table is, they were probably right. He was the best quarterback in that class.
Exactly.
But it was such a poor class is the problem.
I mean, you just don't reach for players in the draft because you don't know how these players are going to pan out. And that's not just quarterback. That's anybody. If you don't value this person right here, don't take them there just because. Like, don't reach for players. Take the person that's available. I mean, you draft for need, but you have to also take the guy that is available at that value, at that pick. You know, you cannot reach for players, especially quarterbacks, because it sets your franchise back. I don't care about the new CBA. These guys are not making as much as they used to. in the previous CBA, but you still set your franchise back years when you decide to reach for a quarterback and draft them in the top 10.
803-0550, 888-550-2550. I agree with that, exactly what he said. We'll come back. We're going to have Paul Domowicz on from the Philadelphia Daily News. He is a TO supporter, and he's on the voting committee for the Hall of Fame. But don't go anywhere if you're online. We'll get to your phone calls as well. Donald Jones with me, Sal Capaccio. A lot more to get to here on the John Murphy Show today.
Radio Network Sports Update.
All right, your sports update for today. The Sabres came back, a win over the San Jose Sharks in overtime, a big 5-4 victory. They were down 4-1. Evander Kane scored two goals. They come back, they win the game 5-4 against the San Jose Sharks. They are next in action tomorrow night against the Anaheim Ducks in Buffalo. 7 o'clock is when the puck drops. That will be a 6 o'clock pregame on radio on WGR and a 6:30 pregame on MSG on TV. The Green Bay Packers have released Niagara Falls native running back James Starks. They've also released defensive back Sam Shields. How about UB last night? Another big win in the MAC for the Bulls. They wind up beating Northern Illinois, and the Syracuse Orange pick up their 5th ACC victory in a row thanks to a buzzer beater by Tyus Battle against Clemson. So now Syracuse, with 5 ACC wins in a row and 5 wins in a row overall, trying to get into that NCAA tournament discussion. I think they're in the discussion now, Donald. Not quite sure they're quite in yet. But, of course, UB looking to defend that MAC championship. 3 straight years they've won the MAC title in the tournament in Cleveland, mm-hmm. but looking for that seeding there. That should be a fun tournament again this year.
It should be. The tournament is in Cleveland?
It's always in Cleveland. Your first-round game is at your site if you play in the first round, unless you get a bye. Right. But otherwise, you're in Cleveland for the MAC, and it's a great place. It's a great venue to be to hold it, so that should be another fun tournament this year.
Do you cover any of the games that are here, the NCAA tournament?
I go.
You go.
When they're here, I'll cover them as far as talking about them, but I don't have to like go and write stories and be a beat reporter and cover the press conferences, but I'll go. I'll usually get a press pass. I'll go. That way I can talk about them. Mm-hmm. And Syracuse came last time, and then, of course, they lost to Dayton, which kind of really, really sucked to be there for it.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure it was.
So it'll
was
be here again this year. It'll be fun. We'll have the NCAA tournament in Buffalo again this year, and that'll be fun. I don't think the way Syracuse is playing right now that they'll be put in Buffalo, even if they make it, but mm-hmm. that would be awesome for those of us who went there as well to see them again this year. So right now we have a special guest on the line, and his name is Paul Domowicz, and he writes for the Philadelphia Daily News, and he is a TO supporter for the Hall of Fame. Now, Donald and I, as you know, yesterday, really, Monday, Donald and I had some poignant things to say to the voters for leaving TO out of the Hall of Fame. We both agree with Paul that he absolutely deserves to get in the Hall of Fame, and it's a crime, and it's a shame that he isn't. And I say it's agenda and ego-driven and selfish voting by the committee members who left him out. And Paul is going to expand upon that because he wrote his article at the Philadelphia Daily News and Philly.com, by the way, explaining the same thing. So we welcome in now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Thanks a lot, Paul. It's Sal. It's Donald. We appreciate you joining us today.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So you go ahead. We went on our soapbox on Monday about Terrell Owens not getting into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but I know you have strong feelings as well, being a guy who writes over there in Philly and who's watched his career. So you go ahead and explain, you know, your thoughts on him not making the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Well, as you said, I mean, I believe strongly that he should be in. He should have been in last year, and he certainly should have been in this year. You know, I can't tell you specifically what goes on in the room, but it's fairly common knowledge that the people that have reservations about him in that room it has nothing to do with his on-field performance and everything to do with disruptive behavior. Now, anybody who's covered T.O. or played with him knows he has been disruptive. My point is that his stats, his performance, his ability are so compelling that they override pretty much anything he may have done as far as his problems as a teammate, his problems with coaches and everything else.
Now, when you look at his career, and maybe the argument can be made that he played in a different kind of era than a lot of these other wide receivers. I'm not making this. I'm going to play devil's advocate. What you would think if someone said, if a voter said to you, Paul, it's not about his disruptive behavior necessarily, but, you know, I give him less weight because he played in a different era, pass-happy era, stuff like that, where you can't compare him to his contemporaries. And we made guys like Art Monk and Chris Carter and Tim Brown and Andre Reed wait a long time before they got in. Would you buy any of that argument?
Not really. I mean, T.O. is one of the best receivers I've ever seen. I'm sure Donald would agree. You know, he's a second in career receiving yards in the league. He's third in career receiving touchdowns. You know, those are kind of Ruthian numbers, aside from everything else. You know, and I think it's kind of dangerous for us in the room to kind of try to be social scientists here, and you know, because we don't know. We don't know what has gone on before in his childhood, mm-hmm. and everything else that's been responsible for the way T.O. has behaved over the years. What we do know is how he's performed. I mean, I watched the guy in 2004 break his leg and tear ligaments in his ankle, need surgery. This is mid-December, and 6 weeks later, he comes back and plays in a Super Bowl and catches 9 passes for 122 yards against the Patriots. So, you know, I just think we're treading on some dangerous ground here when we try to judge him on something other than performance.
Hey, Paul, when I got here, it was, I think, a year after T.O. was here. But everybody who I talked to talked about him and being a good teammate. Everybody who I talked to in the media here said that he was a good guy here. Now, obviously, when he got here, he was trying to, you know, hang on to his career. You covered him in Philly, where he was kind of in the peak of his career. How did he treat you as a media member?
He was fine. I mean, you know, he had his moments with the media, but I mean, that's not something. That's usually not something that 99% of the people in that room consider. I mean, we've let in a lot of guys that have treated the media badly, so that has nothing to do with it. You know, Donald, I want. Two guys I talked to, or that have been quoted, I talked to Brian Dawkins after he did not get in on Saturday, and after talking to him about his disappointment over not getting in, I asked him about T.O., and, you know, Brian played with him. Brian was on that 2000, both the Super Bowl team and the 2005 team in which T.O. imploded and pretty much destroyed. I mean, there were a lot of other reasons why that team, in the year after they went to the Super Bowl, struggled. But T.O. was a big part of that. And Brian said, you know, it took that team 2 years to get back on his feet after what T.O. did. And Brian still feels this guy's a slam dunk Hall of Famer. Brian Westbrook, who played with T.O., same thing. I mean, you know, regardless of what you think of him, he is a Hall of Fame player and belongs in the Hall of Fame. So, yeah, I mean, even when, you know, the funny thing is when T.O. Had his problems in 2005 with the Eagles, mainly it was a besides his reservations about his, I mean, he was upset with the organization over his contract. He also had a much publicized fight, you may remember, with Donovan McNabb during that period. The two of them had a major falling out that was kind of at the core of everything. And even in the middle of all that, more of the locker room sided with T.O. than Donovan. And Donovan really did nothing wrong. He just, you know, I mean, it's just that many people liked T.O.'s, even when he wasn't, when he was behaving badly. So, yeah, I mean, I try to explain to other voters, you look at his track record, you look at San Francisco, because the point that a lot of his critics make is that his disruptive behavior dragged teams down. It didn't happen in San Francisco. You look at their records when T.O. was there, you know, I think they had like 4 12-win seasons. You look, you know, the Eagles signed him or traded for him, and they go to the Super Bowl with him. They couldn't have done it without him. He got hurt in December, missed the first two playoff games, but he got them, helped get them the first round bye, and then came and played in the Super Bowl. So I'm not seeing where he's dragging teams down, except for 2005 with the his last year with the Eagles, when he just, you know, when there were just, when everything kind of blew up in his face. So, I'm disappointed he's not in. I mean, I don't. It makes us look bad as a voting group. People tell me, well, he's going to get in eventually. That's probably the case, but, you know, when I talk to some of the other voters, a lot of them sure seem entrenched in their belief that this guy does not belong in the Hall of Fame.
Which tells that it could be a long time before he gets in, if ever. I read Peter King's MMQB, who said the same thing. What you just did, he echoed that. He said, talking with some people, there's some people who aren't going to move off this spot, and I think that's terrible. We could be sitting here 5-6 years from now having the same conversation, Paul, and I think maybe that, I don't know if that means a flawed process, maybe getting new blood in that room. I'm not really sure what the answer is to that. Maybe you do.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. We've got two ex players who are Hall of Famers in that room, in Dan Fouts and guy that used to play for you guys, James Lofton. Mm-hmm. You might want to have them on your show, see what they have to say. I can't tell you what they said in the room, but I don't think. The answer necessarily is that it's writers that have an agenda, because I just don't think that's the case.
What did you think of the class this year, the guys who did make it?
You know, I had some problems with it. I mean, this is I usually can get a pretty good feel. I've been doing this for 15 years, usually have a pretty good sense going in who I think probably is going to make it and who's not, or at least who's going to come close. There were two major surprises for me. One was Morton Anderson. He'd been a finalist, I guess, for 4 years, but he had never gotten into the final 10, and I didn't expect him to this year either. I did not vote for him. I don't have any problems with a kicker being in the Hall of Fame. It's just that, you know, Morton, he played a long time, and he's the leading scorer in NFL history because he played for a long time. But you look at his accuracy percentages, both overall and beyond 50 yards, and you know, he's 51st in field goal accuracy. He's, I could name dozens of guys who have a better 50-plus accuracy rate, so I just didn't think he was the kicker that we should be letting in next. The other guy that surprised me was Terrell Davis. Mm-hmm. Terrell Davis had 4 Hall of Fame years. I mean, was responsible for maybe even more than Elway for those 2 Super Bowl titles. But he had the misfortune of hurting his knee when he tried to make a tackle, and so essentially had a 4-year career. I mean, he played 7, but the final 3 were just, you know, bits and pieces of a career. And I just, you got to draw the line somewhere in how many years, of Hall of Fame caliber play you have to get in. And I just, 4 years just seemed like a stretch to me, and so I had some problems with that one. So.
Hey, Paul, I got a couple of guys in who are going to be up next year that I want to talk to you about. But before I get to that, you talked about Brian Dawkins and him being snubbed as well. So why did you feel like Brian Dawkins was snubbed?
Well, I tried to make the case that Brian is, safeties. There aren't a lot of safeties in the Hall of Fame, as you guys know. It's been a position that's been a tough sell over the years, but Brian kind of he was a totally different safety. He I know this word is overused, but he redefined the position. I mean, he was a guy that could cover wide receivers on the outside. He was probably one of the best blitzing safeties in the history of the league. Vicious hitter. I mean, there was not. In Jim Johnson's defense, he did everything. I mean, he was the heart and soul of that defense. And, you don't see guys that can do – he was part corner, part safety, part linebacker, and he was 185 pounds to boot for most of his career. So we're not talking about a big guy. I think what happened with him, guys, he made it into the final 10, and I was kind of hopeful at that point because I looked at who the final 10 were. Included Anderson and Davis and some other guys that were kind of, none of them were, the only slam dunk this year was LaDainian Tomlinson. So there were some opportunities for guys to get in. But one of the other guys was John Lynch, who, I think is probably a Hall of Fame safety. I do not think he's in the same category or class as Brian. But I think what ended up happening was they canceled each other out, much like we've seen in the past with Andre Reed a few years back when there were three wide receivers for about 3 or 4 years in a row. They kept canceling each other out and preventing each other from getting into the Hall of Fame. And I think that's what happened this year with Doc. So it's going to be interesting going forward because in a couple of years we had Ed Reed entering the situation and then Troy Polamalu a year after that. So, yeah, that's why I thought this was a really good opportunity for him to get in.
Now, some guys that are going to come up next year, and we talk about T.O., and one of the things that you can never argue is he was never really in trouble off the field. You know, I'm talking about real trouble off the field. A couple of guys that are going to come up next year, and Ray Lewis and Randy Moss, guys that have been in trouble off the field, do you think they'll get in first ballot?
Well, yeah, I think Ray will. Randy, I don't know. I mean, we're going to be – I mean, not because of anything he did off the field, though. I mean, because of – you know, if people have reservations about T.O.'s behavior as a teammate, we're going to have the same discussion with Randy, I'm assuming. I don't have a problem with – I mean, I think Randy's the first – you know, I think he belongs in. But I'm just going on what we just went through the last 2 years with T.O. But as far as Ray – as far as a lot of guys with off-the-field situations, unlike baseball, we're not supposed to consider that. And I think if you look at the history of some guys that have gotten in, we haven't. You know, you go back to LT. I mean, Lawrence Taylor's off-the-field problems are well-documented. And he went in first, you know, I mean, he went in the first year he was eligible. You know, there have been guys, you know, I could go down the list of guys that were turds to deal with that were, you know, I mean, just had a ton of problems. But, I mean, the good thing about this Hall of Fame compared to baseball is that, you know, we don't judge people on character because, I mean, off-the-field behavior, because that's not what we should be doing. I mean, we don't, you know, we live in glass houses here. I mean, we shouldn't be, you know, who are we to judge players on their off-the-field behavior, which is kind of why the T.O. situation is so touchy, because it's the line between on the field and off the field here, and what we're determining with disruptive behavior is you know, kind of it's very thin.
Paul Domowicz joining us here from Philly.com on the John Murphy Show. Paul, if I may, I want to ask you a couple of questions about this current Eagles team where they're going, especially Carson Wentz after his rookie year last year. They gave up a lot to make sure they were in position to draft him. 1 year in, how is that looking for that franchise and going forward with Carson Wentz? And about the defense, obviously Jim Schwartz was here in Buffalo. He went to Philadelphia early on in the season. Lots of things were going well. People in Buffalo said, look at that, there goes Jim Schwartz again. But it seemed to kind of fall apart a little bit as the season went on. So just kind of give us a sense of where the Eagles are set up going forward here into 2017.
Well, with regard to Carson, John, I mean, he had his ups and downs his first season, but I think, you know, I mean, they're confident that, you know, they've invested a lot in this guy. I mean, they're pretty much, they're going forward with the belief that this guy is going to be their quarterback for the next 10, 15 years. And obviously, if you don't guess right on a quarterback, especially one you've invested the draft picks they have, you know, it can blow up in your face and set you back. You know, Carson appears to be the real thing. He's got some, you know, improvements that he needs to make. His mechanics are, you know, he had some problems with his mechanics at times. But he, you know, he's very poised for a kid that came out of Division I AA. You know, they like his athleticism. I mean, they kind of, and he sees it too, that, you know, you saw in the playoffs what a guy like Aaron Rodgers can do outside of the pocket. You know, now he needs to work on his out-of-pocket accuracy, but he's got the athleticism to be able to pick up a first down here and there with his legs, but also, more importantly, to get outside and extend plays. What they don't have right now is the receivers for him to throw to that Aaron Rodgers has. So, you know, that's an area they've got to improve in and will be one of their top priorities during the offseason, is getting him some receivers. Defensively with Jim, you're right. They started out great, and even later in the season played well at times. I mean, they beat Atlanta, held Matt Ryan and the Falcons to 15 points when they beat them. what they, you know, they got, they brought a couple corners from Buffalo. You know, he signed three guys. They signed three guys that played for Jim in Buffalo. You know, they still need to upgrade that position to corner, but I think what they really need, you know, Jim's okay. He seems to be okay with adequate corners. If, you know, everything about with Jim, and he has admitted this, it's all about the pass rush. You know, if you didn't pressure the quarterback, you can get away with having, you know, you don't need shutdown corners because, you know, the guy's got to get off his spot and is not going to have a lot of time to throw. So I think, you know, and a lot of people seem to disagree with me because a lot of the defensive focus in Eagles fans' minds during the offseason has been on cornerback. I think they need to get themselves another difference-making edge rusher.
All right, Paul, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. Great insight, and we thank you for joining us here on the John Murphy Show today. And good luck to T.O. next year, and we're with you, man. We both believe, Donald and I believe, that he needs to be in, and hopefully next year, but we'll see how this thing goes. But thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
All right, no problem. Thank you very much, Paul Domowicz from Philly.com. That whole T.O. discussion is...
It's crazy. It really is, because, like you said, they're not supposed to consider off-the-field issues.
Right.
And what are we talking about with T.O.? We're talking about off-the-field stuff. We're talking about him doing sit-ups in his driveway. We're talking about him, you know, and even though he said that, we're talking about him not treating the media well. We're talking about he was a disruption to the team. Like, come on, man. The dude scored points. He put up yards and scored points. He helped the teams win.
I also love the point he made, and I actually thought about this, and I never said it on the air, but I'm glad he did. The point of, like, who are we to play psychologist?
Right.
We don't know why the man acted the way he did. There's obviously something in his life or something going on there that caused him to react and act in certain ways. And I think, as Paul said, I think it's a great point to say, you get in some dangerous territory when you start penalizing people for what could very well not really be even something under their control. Maybe Terrell Owens has some sort of mental health issue that he deals with that he has to try to control, and he can't. I don't know that. What I'm saying is it might not be something that he could control his whole life because of other things that happened in his past.
Listen, I've said this about many players that have been in trouble in this league. You just don't know what a person is going through. Mm-hmm. People feel like, or people think, that because these guys are in the pros and they're making this type of money, that they shouldn't have off-the-field issues. They shouldn't have things that they're dealing with at home. And that is totally false. That is totally inaccurate, because these guys are human beings at the end of the day. They make a little bit more money than other people, but they still have issues that they've been dealing with for a long time, or issues that they deal with now in their everyday life, you know? So you can't fault the person for doing something when you don't even know what's going on at home or what this person grew up with, or you just don't know, you know? So until you know things like that, it's really tough to come down on a player for the things that they're doing, because you just don't know.
803-0550, the number to call here on the John Murphy Show. Frank has been waiting quite a while through that interview in South Buffalo, and we appreciate it. Hi, Frank. You're on the air. What's up?
Hi. How you guys doing? I was wondering, what do you think about bringing DeSean Jackson in free agency?
Well, I think it falls for me, Donald, under the same thing we've talked about, which is, are you going to pay top money, which is what he's going to command, for a guy that's essentially your number two wide receiver?
Yeah, I mean, DeSean Jackson, I think
he'd be your number one if Sammy isn't on the field. But
yeah, he'd be your number one if Sammy's not on the field. But he's a guy who wants money, mm-hmm. you know, and he's going to command money. Somebody's going to pay him some money. He'd probably be one of those guys that'll go back to the West Coast where he's from, San Fran or one of those teams, and command, you know, at least $10 million for 1 year or something like that, you know. And are the Bills ready to pay that? Now, can you say, yeah, you can do it for 1 year? You can say that, but at the end of the day, you're trying to build out a roster, you know. So you need to do a very good job at finding guys that you don't have to pay as much money and drafting well, you know. And that's how you fill out a roster, and that's how you make a team good for years to come.
Right. And, yeah, I don't think – I like DeSean.
I like DeSean and Pierre Garçon. Like, both of those guys.
Honestly, I would – I'm not saying I'd rather have Robert Woods, all things being equal, but if I'm gonna pay for a wide receiver, I don't mind paying for Robert Woods.
I don't mind paying for Robert Woods either, because Robert Woods is always open.
Right.
Like, he's
but
a
I
natural
can't do
wide
it
receiver.
Given the way the roster is.
Right. You know, Robert Woods is always open. He's a natural wide receiver. He's not the fastest guy, but he can catch a fade ball for you if you need him to. He can get open. He can work the middle. Like, that's what he does. And he can catch the ball, you know. So those are the guys that you have to have. You have to have guys that can go deep, but you have to have guys that can run routes, that are savvy with their route running. If you have that combination, then you have a good team. The problem is Robert Woods is going to command too much money. And the way the roster is right now, the way the salary cap sets up, you just can't do it.
I agree with you. Let's go to Sean in Williamsville. Hi, Sean. You're on WGR on MSG.
How you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
So, talking about first-round draft picks earlier and everything with, like, Mike Williams and all those, but who do you guys expect the Bills to use their franchise tag on? Because, honestly, like,
nobody.
If you think about it, they are probably going to use it on Stephon Gilmore.
No, I don't think they are. I don't think they're using it on anybody. There's no rule that says they have to use it.
Yeah, but if they don't, because they can't get him, they can't get Stephon to, you know, come down with a contract because he wants to be one of the top players and, like, paid players in the NFL. But if you use the franchise tag on him and then...
Correct. You asked me who do I expect them to use the tag on. My answer is nobody. I don't think they're going to tag Stephon. They might. That decision has not yet been made. But my point is I don't think they're going to do it because that's also $14 million for 1 year, and I don't think they'd do that. I think they're going to give him an offer, and it's not going to be that as much as that. And if he decides to take it, he takes it. If not, he goes elsewhere. I do not think they're going to place the tag on him or anyone else.
Okay. But... then again, you guys were just talking about taking a wide receiver in the first round.
No, we're asking you if you think they should take a wide receiver because Todd McShay has them drafting a wide receiver in the first round. Would you do it?
Definitely not.
Okay.
First round would definitely have to be probably one of the better safeties coming out of the draft because, I mean, it is a very top-heavy, and this draft class is very top-heavy in the – defensive back category. But
yeah, I agree. Yeah, there are some good ones, especially the couple safeties that are there, but we don't know if they'll be there.
Yeah, you just don't know. You never know who's going to be there in the draft. But
well, the
I think
fun,
one
man.
Of those safeties are going to be there. The problem is the kid from Ohio State has what, the torn labrum?
Yeah, he's not going to be at the combine maybe. I don't. It shouldn't affect his draft status too much.
How does it affect him going into the season, right?
Like, yeah,
that's the issue. And the Bills, listen, we all know that Doug, Coach McDermott, they don't really care about what people think.
Right.
But if they take a guy with the torn shoulder,
yeah, people
then it's
going to
be some blowback.
No
right?
doubt about
right.
that. When we come back, there is a coach in football that nobody wants to coach with. Just don't want to coach on his staff. And I think I know why, and I'll tell you when we come back here on WGR on MSG.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Donald, have you ever had a boss you just really hated working for? In any line. I mean, you've only really been a football player in the media, but
yeah.
I know. I just opened it up that you could make basically like have some fun with what I just said because we're
could,
on the air.
Right?
Here,
so I could name a few. Bosses here.
That's right.
Coaches when I was
without
in
naming names. Have you ever done anything in your life where you worked for somebody, whether you're in high school or a job when you're in college? I know you're playing football and all that, but you just like or a coach?
Yes, I did.
A position coach, anything
especially
like that?
Especially coaches. Coaches when I was in college, couldn't stand them.
Really?
Like I do not like. And then you know, obviously,
but you were
I
the player.
New England.
But you were the player. You know, they were the coach.
Right.
What
but
about
still,
just if you were
like
in a professional work setting?
I guess when I went to New England, see, technically. The coaches have the title as your coach, but they still are your coworker, right? Like,
we make this
as much money. We all have families.
Yeah,
we're all
you.
Adults here. So
you want to be treated like an adult.
Right.
You know, you're a man now. With your experience in the NFL, did you ever see, how often did you see, I'm sure it happens, how often did you see, like, position coaches or coordinators, they just did not like the head coach? I mean, you knew that was the case. They might not have said it all the time, but they had to work together because you're trying for a common goal, but you could tell, like, they just didn't like each other.
I've seen it all the time.
Really?
It all the time.
When Does
I was
happen
in
a
school,
lot?
One of my schools, my head coach would threaten to fire the assistant coaches all the time during the course of the game. Jeez. Like, I will fire you if you don't get this together.
Really?
Like, all the time.
Does that happen in the NFL a lot?
I never seen it in the NFL. Nah, I never seen
it. No one could not like Chan anyway, right?
Yeah, Chan was a good dude.
Everybody
like
Chan.
Chan was like a good dude. He's a family guy. Yeah. You know, he didn't really yell or anything like that too often. But my coach in college would threaten, like, and if you threaten to fire me on a regular basis, I'm sorry. I can't deal with this. I got to go find another job.
Well, look, there's obviously one coach in football who nobody likes working for, and that is Nick Saban. Guys cannot wait to get away from Nick Saban. But the crazy part is, if you stay with Nick Saban, you're going to be a national champion many times over and always win, which is what you want, right?
Right.
But even though he always wins, guys can't wait to get away from Nick Saban. Look at what Lane Kiffin did immediately. Boom. Even before the season was over, he took that job and went down to FIU. And Saban basically said, get out. And he said, I want to get out because he couldn't wait to get away, right? And now the Atlanta Falcons are hiring Steve Sarkisian, who just took over for Lane Kiffin and spent one game as their offensive coordinator and said, I'm going to the NFL, which is a better job, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But he obviously wanted to get away from Nick Saban. Nick Saban has a reputation as someone that nobody ever wants to work for. And this goes way back. I've told some Nick Saban stories about this, and I'll explain this again. I'll tell this again on the air. I don't know if you've ever heard this, but if those of you who never have, it's insane. And this is a true story. So Nick Saban used to be called by many of his guys who worked for him. He might still be called this, no thank you, Nick. Because he never says no. He never says thank you to anybody. He drives you really hard. He makes you grind and work, and you better be there when the sun comes up, and you better stay till the sun goes down. And he didn't even let his assistant coaches in college, when back in the day, I don't know if this is still true, ever take a lunch away from the facility. They had to have their lunch there while watching film. Could never do anything other than football, 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 football.
That's crazy.
Right? So Nick Saban is at Michigan State. And he is, you know, a good coach at Michigan State. He winds up getting the job at LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Goes down there before he won his national championship. He goes down to LSU. He's there. He accepts the job. He sends a private plane back to East Lansing at Michigan State. And he says, basically, all my assistant coaches, because you're my guys, get on the plane. You come down here. You'll be out of your contracts there. We'll get you new contracts here. You're going to make a lot more money. Get on the plane. Come down here. You're all set.
Mm-hmm.
The plane went back to Baton Rouge and landed it, and it opened up, and it was empty.
Empty.
Not one of his assistant coaches got on that plane and went with him to LSU.
I've talked to a lot of players when he was at LSU and now at Alabama that don't like him. You know, and there's a lot of players throughout the league. If you talk to players, most of the guys didn't like their college coaches.
Okay.
And that had a lot to do with just how much credit the coach actually takes for winning and winning championships. And they don't give the players any credit, you know. So guys don't like that. But I talked to a lot of guys that did not like playing for Nick Saban.
He's the nephew of Lou Saban, who's on the Bills Wall of Fame, who used to be a coach here.
Mm-hmm.
But look, here's the thing, and I think Nick Saban is maybe the greatest coach in football today, and that includes Bill Belichick. I think he is maybe the best coach at any level, although he necessarily couldn't do it at the NFL because of the way he coaches.
Right.
Just as a pure football coach and the way he runs things and his knowledge and his system and all that, how can you deny he's the best coach in college?
You know,
he does every year. I mean, he has great recruits. I get it. And
I
think Dabo is there too.
College coaching is more about recruiting than anything else, right? Like, the sport is obviously about the players. You got to have the recruits. Nick Saban can go in to anybody's living room. Any kid in high school is going to be wild if Nick Saban walks into your living room and sits down on your couch and says,
shows you a bunch of rings.
Exactly. Show you a bunch of rings. How many guys we have in the first round every single year. How many championships we have. We're in the playoffs every year. All of that stuff. SEC, all of that stuff. You're going to be wild. And so I think that because of the school where he is, because of the resources they give him, the stadium and everything they have around them, he's able to go and recruit any kid in the country.
Probably right. Probably right.
And so for me, college coaching is you got to have a good system. But you even look at their system. Like, he has a good defense because he has the best players every single year. They run a pro-style type of defense. Their offense is never really that good. Like, they'll get the good wide receiver. They never have a top quarterback or something like that, you know. But their defense is always just that good, and it carries them throughout the entire season. You know, so
no doubt that is a big part of it. I still think he's a fantastic coach, but no doubt he gets better recruits. But he's won everywhere he's been: Michigan State, LSU, yes. Alabama, and you know he went up the ladder. He was at Toledo, went 9-2, his first coaching job in 1990. But Nick Saban, apparently nobody wants to work for him ever. And then he went to the NFL, and he was a real jerk to the players too. And that's why he couldn't. You couldn't coach like that.
You
couldn't coach like that in the NFL. It's so funny because, you know, we always hear people say, well, back in my day, and they talk about how different. It is different coaching today. I can tell you. I was only at the high school level, but I was in a state where it was very important, obviously, football. But even in the years, and I coached essentially in high school from 2000 to 2010. In that decade, Donald, it changed. It changed, I could tell you, on a daily basis, the way you could talk to kids, handle kids, be around them, the parents, and the way they felt. And I don't know, but somewhere in that time period from 2000 to 2010, I can tell you, in that 10-year period that I was there coaching and being around, you know, basically 15 to 18-year-olds, it changed. Even now, those athletes today are now your pro athletes. I think dealing with pro athletes today is way different than it's ever been because of social media and the money they make compared to when they were pretty much owned by the organization and the coach and all that. The players have a lot more control, a lot more power, and a lot more accessibility to things that they want to do and resources today.
Right, and you're not going to stop a player from – like, the Patriots don't really allow you to use social media.
Right.
They allow you to do some endorsement things, but he tells you when you get there, like, I don't want you tweeting, I don't want you on Snapface or whatever he calls it.
I still love that.
And that's just the way he is. But the fact of the matter is he drafts a lot of those players there. Like, he doesn't get a lot of guys to come in there and stay there. He'll get a guy to come there, and they're like, man, they're so happy when they leave and go somewhere else. And you hear them all the time, I'm so happy I can just be myself. Today, in social media, players are able to talk to fans. Fans are able to talk to players. Players are able to market themselves. At the end of the day, players now know that they are a business. Their brand is a business, right?
They are their own corporation.
They are their own corporation. And so you can't tell me that I can't market myself. You know, I want to be able to market myself. And because of that, guys don't like Bill Belichick. Because of that, Nick Saban wouldn't be a guy that would work in the NFL just because of him being a jerk towards the players.
So if I gave you a choice, okay, if you could, I said, Donald, let's say you want to be a coach. You're involved in coaching, whatever. Donald, you can work for Nick Saban. It's going to be the worst grind of your life for a year.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be horrible. You're going to work harder than you ever had. You're going to be yelled at on a daily basis by your boss. You're going to go to work as early as you can and get out as late as you can. But I'm also guaranteeing you a national championship at the end of it. Are you going to do it?
No. I wouldn't do it.
There are a lot of people who will, though.
There are a lot of people who will jump at that opportunity.
To them, it's about the national championship, not about how you're treated. To me, it's how you're treated, too, though.
Yeah.
I don't think – I would say no. As competitive as I am, I couldn't deal with that for a year.
I couldn't deal with going to work and being miserable every day.
Every day. Being miserable every day. That's
like
what it is.
I'm sorry. The money is one thing. The national championship, that's all good. But – I do not want to go to work and be miserable every day.
And then you come home and you're miserable.
Right.
To your wife and your kid.
Exactly.
Around them, at least. Maybe not to them, but around them. You know, the coach that is mostly compared to Nick Saban and the NFL, of course, is his friend, Bill Belichick. And on the same note of never being off, always working hard, Bill Belichick, this is what happened. We're about to play it for you. This is what happened at the Patriots Super Bowl parade when Bill Belichick got the microphone and had the Lombardi trophy in his hand. Okay, now Bill Belichick is already awkward enough as it is when he has a microphone on him or anything. Yeah. I have to ask, what the heck was that? That is the worst chant I've ever heard in my life. It means nothing. That was
days off. Did you see the players' faces standing next to him?
What, that was the weirdest thing
like,
ever.
What is he? What? No days off. He's tripping right now.
Right. What? There's the weirdest chant I've ever heard.
No
Who
days
chants
off.
No days off? What does that even mean?
Man, it's
why
a weird...
you're chanting that at a victory parade? What?
He's a weird guy.
That is the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
It's a different dude. You're talking about. You're at like a Super Bowl championship parade, and you're chanting no days off.
When people have taken off work to go there.
To come see you.
By the way, that originally, what I just said, people took off work. I heard Ryan Gates, our producer at WGR, say that last night, and he was right. And I'm like, he's so right, but he's right. People took the day off to go there, but what kind of a chant is that? That is the weirdest chant I've ever heard. No days off? I don't know how you would even come up with that to chant to people and why people would rally. And then you have these Pats fans, oh, Belichick saying it must be cool.
Yeah.
No days off. No days off. Yeah, kid in the fifth row. Did you have your mom write you a pass to get out of school today? Right?
They might have gave the entire city.
They might have gave everybody got off that
everybody
day.
Got off. But I'm telling you, if you look at the players' faces in that video, they're like, nah,
what does he mean?
Man.
They're
yeah.
laughing. They're like, this is kind of weird.
This is
what are we
weird.
Chanting
like,
about
yeah,
here?
Yeah, like, nah, we need days off. What
no
are we
days off.
About?
Let's play that again as we go to break. We're going to go to break. Let's play the sound on our way out to break. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Belichick in all his glory yesterday.
No days off. No days off. No days off. No days off. No days.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Apparently, Murph didn't get the memo from Bill Belichick, no days off.
No days off.
Because Murph. He is off for the rest of the week still.
Yes.
He's been off all week. You ever get a vacation? You're like always here, man. You ever get a vacation?
You know, I don't really take days off. The only days I take off are when I have to go do a speech or something.
Okay.
You know? I don't really believe in it.
Man, you're like, you're the Bill Belichick clone here.
I'm gonna
no
wait.
No days off!
No, nah, I'm going to wait, though, until to the summertime when there's really nothing going on in the league. Then it's like, all right.
There's always something going on in this league, Donald. Come on.
Oh,
you learned that.
In June and July, the only thing that's going
there is
on
a dead
at that
period.
Point is players getting in trouble.
No, that's right. Don't be one of those guys. That's right. Marty in North Collins. What's up, man?
Hi, Sal. Hi, Donald.
Hi.
What's up?
Hey, I was just listening to you guys on the way home, and I think you guys are doing a great job while Murph is away. So I just want to say, way to hold the fort down, Donald. You're doing awesome. You should be at the Super Bowl next year.
I hope so. Well,
thanks,
it's in
man.
Minnesota, so huh? I don't know.
Well, maybe not. You know, it's not in Florida.
Wait till it's in a warm weather city in a couple of years. Donald
exactly.
will be there.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds better. But hey, I was kind of looking at the draft the last couple of weeks, too, and I'm just kind of confused. I want to talk the draft, but I'm just kind of confused on which way we're going because a few weeks ago we were talking about a total rebuild, and now we're kind of talking like we're a couple pieces away. So I'm like kind of stuck in the mud on it because I don't know how I would approach it if I was the GM because I don't know how the Bills are going to approach it because I don't know what they're thinking.
None of us do, Marty. That's the crazy question. We really don't know if they're going to strip it down or if they're going to try and, you know, go forward. I think it's the latter. I think when people said that Doug Whaley was saying about a rebuild, I don't think he was really talking about that. I think he was talking about what it takes to be a yearly contending team and a championship team, Donald. But as we've talked about here, we will know more of the direction once March comes around in free agency.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you have to wait. We're all stuck in the mud until March.
That's right.
What they do with Tyrod Taylor really tells you, for me, it tells us where they are as a team, where they are as an organization, and what they want to do. Is this a total rebuild, or are they just building from the foundation that they have? And when you decide that you want to let that quarterback go, Tyrod Taylor, and just draft a guy, I think you are essentially in a rebuild at that point.
Let's go out to Mark in New Jersey. Mark, you're on with Mark, where are you in New Jersey, by the way?
I'm in Jersey City.
Okay. So how far is that from Plainfield, Donald?
Away from where Donald was.
It's about 25, 30 minutes.
Oh, not too bad.
Yeah.
But Jersey, like everywhere in Jersey is like 25 minutes, isn't it?
No, no.
Come on.
No.
It's like as big as my thumb, man. Isn't it? I don't know.
I mean, it's not big, but if you're going down South Jersey, places like that, that's kind of like
stick. Take you 2 or 3 hours.
What's up, Mark?
Yeah, as far as the draft goes, no, I don't want a wide receiver there. You either get one of the safeties or you pull out. I would prefer them trading down because the quarterback that I like isn't even there. He's considered lower, which is Peterman. Hooker or Adams. And I don't know what they're going to do with Tyrod, like you guys just alluded to. That's going to really reset the bar for the whole season. So, I mean, the safety that can control the middle of the field and shut it down, Adams or Hooker, great. Or, you know, get out of there and try to accumulate picks.
Yeah. I think, you know, what's going to be interesting. Like, I wish that you can hear when the announcement comes out what they're going to do with Tyrod Taylor. Just everybody's – I mean, obviously, we're going to hear it here.
You're going to have a lot of reaction here. You will hear, Donald.
As soon as that announcement comes down, it's either going to be like, whew, all right, now we know we're not just rebuilding everything, or it's going to be like, oh, my God, I can't believe we're rebuilding this thing, and we might not win for – you could win next year. You might not win.
The other thing, though, what might happen, Donald, is you never know. Maybe we hear they're not keeping Tyrod, and then suddenly a week later there's some other move we didn't expect that happens. Right. I don't know. I'm not predicting that. But these things are roller coasters,
man. You never know. Draft day, something crazy can happen.
Right?
Like, you just never know in this league. So, for me – We don't know what's going to happen, but if you decide to let Tyrod Taylor walk out the door, I do think that you're rebuilding. I just don't think – you bring Jay Cutler in here, like, nah. Jay Cutler hasn't been a guy that's seemed like he wanted to win in I don't know how long. And then Tony Romo just – how much are you going to pay him, number one? Number two, anybody can get hurt in this league, but this guy has major injuries.
Yep.
Over the past couple of years, you know. So I just wouldn't agree with them signing him to, you know, a $14 million contract a year or something, $15 million a year, which is he's going to command that.
Right.
For him to come out here and get hurt.
Hey, Mark, before we get to the top of the hour and let you go, what about our Twitter poll? What if they took a receiver at 10? Are you okay with that at all?
Mike Williams has that neck thing that bothers me. And I don't know about the separation stuff. I do like the fact he goes up and get it, but I don't like that.
What if it was Corey Davis?
That'd be okay. Seems like a younger, hungrier kid. You're just kind of worried about the competition, maybe. But it's for me. Wide receiver is always about who's throwing him the ball more than anything.
Yeah, I got you, man. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call, Mark. As always.
Thanks, man.
All right, no problem. We're going to take a timeout. We'll come back. Donald and I got a lot more to get to. Donald wants to get into this NBA logo thing on the jerseys a little bit, I think, today. So maybe we can talk about that
and
the NFL and the NHL and where they're going with all that, because that was a story that came up. But a lot more from you as well, of course. A wide receiver at 10, does it make sense to you? Todd McShay has the Bills taking one in his latest mock draft. We got a Twitter poll up on it. We're going to take your phone calls when we come back to the John Murphy Show, an hour left.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Well, it's a good night for me last night, Donald. Last night, I went and I called the UB Hoops game, all right, on ESPN3, and they wound up winning. They beat Northern Illinois. It was tied at half, but they had a great second half, and they wound up beating Northern Illinois. A big, big win for UB in the MAC last night there. Then I went home. I turned on my TV to see the end of the Sabres game. They win 5-4 in overtime against the San Jose Sharks. It was Evander Kane with two goals, including the game winner. Sabres were down 4-1, a big comeback. And then after that, as I was keeping an eye on the Syracuse game, I went back to that one, and they wound up getting a buzzer beater to win. Tyus Battle, the freshman, hits one from the corner. They've now won 5 in a row in the ACC. So lots happened last night, and the Sabres with the comeback win, UB with a big win, Syracuse with a comeback win and a buzzer beater. I was a happy camper last night. That was a darn good night for me. Not a good day today if you're Niagara Falls native running back James Starks for the Packers. He's been released of his contract, so he is now a free agent. Also, the Packers releasing Sam Shields, who is a defensive back. And you and I both know Sam in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I actually coached against him, Booker High School in Florida. He was a stud wide receiver, wide receiver. And he went to college as a wide receiver to Miami.
He did.
Then he switched to DB. But back in the day, at Booker High School, by the way, that's your sports update here on the John Murphy Show. But back at Booker High School in Sarasota, his parents used to go to all the football games and track meets, and they would basically cook barbecue there and they were so good. Basically, the joke was, yeah, we'd go to Booker, we'd get our butts kicked, but get fed well. But he has a great family, and I know Sam Shields was a good player for the Packers, won a Super Bowl that year for them, and him and James Starks now have been released.
Sam's been injured as of late, which is probably why, and he's making some money, you know, so that's probably why they let him go out the door. But Sam, you know, him and I met at the Texas First Nation game down in El Paso, Texas. He was coming out of Miami. I was coming out of Youngstown State. We played on the same team, and I remember them saying that he played wide receiver and DB. So when we were doing one-on-ones, he was doing both. He would go play wide receiver, then he'd go play DB, and that's why, you know, he still ended up going undrafted, I believe, but became a very good corner and got paid out in Green Bay and, like you said, won a Super Bowl with them. James Starks, I met when I got here through Naaman Roosevelt. Him and Naaman obviously were good friends because of UB. Mm-hmm. And I remember James had, like, a draft party that in 2010 when we all came out. It was up in Niagara Falls, and so we went up there, and that's when I met him. And, you know, just talking to Naaman always about him, James, you know, he loved playing for the Packers, and he had fun winning games and stuff like that. But, you know, it's the NFL, and teams move on from you or you move on from them. At some point, it's going to happen, right?
So
hopefully he gets another job in this league. I still think he can get it done.
You know, James was a football, a basketball player, too, at Niagara Falls High School. Mm-hmm. His teammates, Johnny Flynn and Paul Harris,
crazy,
who went to Syracuse.
Yeah.
And I believe, I've been told, I don't know, James was, like, as good as them pretty much in basketball as well.
Right.
But he wanted to play football. They didn't play football, but he did. I've read somewhere that James and Johnny Flynn are actually cousins. I don't know if that's actually accurate, but I have read that. But I'm being told it is true in my ear. So there you go. So Jay Harris has been on top of things, helping us out today a lot. But he
Jay
said
does
that.
Some work sometimes. He does some work sometimes. You know, not all the time, but sometimes,
sometimes
he does do work. No, you know what? This crazy thing, like, before I got up here, you know, Niagara Falls to me was just the falls. I never knew people came from there. Like, I never knew people lived there.
Lived there, know?
And then
went to
I
high
met
school
him,
there.
And I started meeting other people. And then I started finding out, like, basketball players that came from there. I'm like,
they have a huge high school basketball tradition up there.
Mm.
Yeah, they've state championships from that area, like
really?
A lot of them. Yeah, they've done well, or at least close to it.
Is it a private school that
there's been schools that have combined up there, public school, but they've done really well over the years. But that's another group. Like you say, come on, think about that group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Starks with Flynn and, you know, Paul Harris
and
all that, you know, amazing. But James Starks, we're watching a little bit of him here. And, of course, you know, he's been in the NFL and he's done a really nice job with the Packers. But, unfortunately, looks like his time there has come to an end. We'll see where his career goes from here. Bo Oliver, another UB product, he's in San Diego, now in L.A., obviously, with the Chargers. He'll be coming back from an Achilles injury.
Oof.
And
that's a tough
one to come back from.
Yeah, that's Achilles is tough to come back from. I think the only thing worse is microfracture. Microfracture of the knee.
Of the knee.
It's tough. Like, guys usually ends guys' careers, you know, that microfracture.
That's worse than ACL?
Yeah. It's because ACL, they can repair and everything. Microfracture, it's like guys are never the same.
Achilles usually don't come back from either. And if you do, you're not the same.
Not the same.
Sam Cowart had an Achilles injury.
Mm-hmm.
He was a fantastic linebacker in Buffalo. One of the best I've ever seen in college at Florida State. One of the best I've ever seen. Comes to Buffalo, has an Achilles, I think, against the Buccaneers one year and never recovered from that. I think that's how, and I bet you Jay Harris tells me, is that how Tequio Spike's career ended maybe? Maybe he had an Achilles
I think
Achilles
he did have
well.
An Achilles, yeah.
Well, maybe not his career, but it went downhill dramatically
from
after that, right?
Yeah, I think
from that
did.
Injury.
We talked about that.
Yeah, I think that's the case.
Jay's
he, now he wants to pretend he knows all the answers in my ear. Let's go to Joel in Rochester. What's up, Joel? You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, guys. I didn't mean to continue to harp on, like, the type of situation, but I was just looking at his stats for the past 2 years, obviously as a starter of the Bills, and I've seen that he's pretty much regressed in every area, like yards passed, touchdown thrown. You know, the only thing he actually improved this year was total rushing yards, but he only improved by 12 rushing yards. And I'm just wondering, you know, going into free agency and the draft, you know, personally, I only think that Deshaun is, you know, maybe the only good quarterback, but, you know, I don't know. Just like the Bills kind of in the history kind of have this, you know, consistent, we stick with nice guys like Tyrod and Fitzpatrick and Manuel. And, you know, we always say like, oh, one more year, but you look at it like the Raiders went 12 and then 8 and, you know, obviously this year, I can't remember what it was, 12 and something or something like that.
Hey, Joel, your phone is breaking up, but I get the gist of it, so I'm going to let you go and let Donald talk about Tyrod not progressing in a lot of areas this year. You look at his completion percentage, it was down a couple of percentage points. Mm-hmm. You look at his yards, they were right around the same. His TD to interception ratio went down from 20-6 to 17-6. Is this more of a case of, you know, what is it? Defense is getting more film on him? Was it the guys being out, the wide receivers, things like that? I mean,
I think it's a combination of the guys being out and just defenses, yeah, having a book on them, you know. So when you're a quarterback in this league or any player in this league, once you get into a couple of years in, they start to know you, you know, especially mm-hmm. the teams you play in your division. They know how you play. They know where you like to throw the ball. So that really hurts you. And so you have to improve every single year so that they don't just have the total book and they can shut you down. Tyrod Taylor really does have to improve in the passing game. He does. He has to. You have to see improvement every single year. But still, even with him declining at the numbers that we just saw, I still just don't think you let him walk out the door. Now, you talk about Deshaun Watson and you talk about all of these quarterbacks that come out of spread offenses. You know, Marcus Mariota came from Chip Kelly's offense mm-hmm. in college, and he's a pretty good quarterback now. Mm-hmm. So it can happen. You can transition into the NFL, and the NFL are going to more spread offenses anyway. But you just don't see that guy that can, you know, right now, you it's like not a lock in your mind that this guy is sure franchise quarterback for the next 10 to 15 years right. and can win you a Super Bowl. And so if you don't see that, you don't just take a guy just because he was good in college.
803-0550 is the number to call. That's where Tony in Buffalo reached us. Hi, Tony. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, how you doing, Sal?
Good, thank you.
Just wondering. Now, are you familiar with what Rex Lyons had said after, you know, he got let go over the Bills?
I mean, I read the interview that Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News posted, if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering if, you know, this is twice that he's kind of, like, shot himself in the foot. I'm wondering if organizations are going to start putting, like, clauses in these contracts with these coaches now, saying, well, if you get fired, that you can't speak bad about the organization. What do you think?
Well, there are things like that that exist. Those are pretty much non-disclosure agreements. And what those mean are, Tony, that when someone leaves a company, whether it's a football or hockey, a professional sports team, or a, you know, a gas company or something, a non-disclosure agreement basically means you can't talk publicly about why you left or what happened with anybody for a certain number of years. And that's usually goes hand in hand with them maybe getting a better severance package or something like that. I don't think you can tell Rex Ryan not to take shots at the Bills, but you may have something in there that says specifically, you are not allowed to talk exactly about our conversations of what led to your being fired. Like, they could put things like that in there.
Oh, okay. I see. Because I don't see that being a common theme. I'm just seeing that from him.
Well, that's because that's Rex, right?
Yeah, that's Rex. I mean, Rex is just going to be that guy. He takes shots. Like, that's just him.
Here's the thing, Tony. What I do think is going to happen is, I don't think Rex Ryan's going to get another head coaching job anywhere anyway, but even if a team was thinking about it, this becomes part of his resume and package, the fact that he can't keep his mouth shut, and I don't think teams are going to want that.
Absolutely, I agree. Yeah, well, it's just like you said, you know, that Bill's job was his last job. He
right.
shot himself in the foot.
I agree with you, and if he stayed quiet, I still think it would, but this doesn't help at all.
It doesn't help at all. If I was a head coach and in any organization, I don't think I'm bringing him in as an assistant. Like, I just don't want to deal with what Rex Ryan brings and all of the media attention and everything, his personality and all of that stuff. It's just too much to bring into my organization,
right.
my team. You know, I just wouldn't deal with it. So, for me, the best chance of Rex Ryan coaching again is to go down to college. And we talked about this, I believe, last week or the week
yeah,
before.
If
he went down there, he could be a great recruiter.
Yep, and on top of that, you're going to get that college a lot of publicity. And look, that's what a lot of it's about.
Right.
If you're a college that's looking to reinvent itself, if you've been down a little bit, mm-hmm. if you need a guy, a name to bring to your program, to give you some cachet, my God, hire Rex Ryan. I bet you kids would love playing for him. And like you said, you go into a room, I'd be down with that. I'd let my son play for Rex Ryan. That's okay. I have no problem with that.
Because you know Rex Ryan has your back.
That's right.
You know Rex Ryan has your kid's back. And that's what is it. I mean, that's partly what it's about.
Right.
When you're a parent and you're deciding, okay, I'm going to let my child go across the country from New Jersey to California to play for this guy.
Is he going
to
take care of him?
Is he
going to
take care of my
him?
Child? Like, yeah, he's still my baby at the end of the
day.
Right. You know, are you going to take care of my child? Are you going to have my child's back if something happens, if the media starts to get on him and all of that stuff? So I think Rex Ryan, could go down to college, get a job, and probably be a good college coach. I
agree 100% because of what you said earlier about Nick Saban. It's really about recruiting, he'll get the recruits.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a college would be smart to hire Rex Ryan. They absolutely would. Now, I'm not talking about an LSU or a USC that doesn't need to bring that cachet necessarily.
Right.
I'm talking about a college that, you know what? Hey, we were good once, maybe 20 years ago. Identify that school. I don't know who it might be. We haven't been yet lately. We need somebody to come in and, you know, give us a shot in the arm. You know what? You're going to have to deal with some things that you don't want to deal with. There's no doubt. And I'm sure the AD is going to have some private conversations with him along the way. But I think that's where he would fit, to be honest with you. Not in the NFL anymore. Rick in Amherst. Hi, Rick. You're on WGR and MSG.
Hey, Sal. How are you guys today?
Good. Thank you.
Good. Hey, one thing I wanted to say. I love listening on the radio. Also, I got 2-year-old twins. And when you play that little GR song right before you come on.
Oh, my God. Well, I don't play it. They do, but I appreciate it. I get it. People sing that to me all the time, and it's become a hit, and I should really have Tom Sitch, who made it, market it, and because we might be able to sell some DVDs or something, CDs.
You what? My little boys giggle. You know what a 2-year-old laugh is like. The two of them go crazy.
It's awesome.
It's the most funniest thing in the world.
Thank you very much, though. I do appreciate it.
Hey, to get on that Cheeto thing, my cap was $30,000. I wasn't going any further.
Harambe, right? Is how you say it?
Harambe.
I said it right.
Harambe,
the Harambe Cheeto that went for close to $100,000. Which, by the way, Darren Revelle reports the person who bid on it has yet to pay up, so they don't think it was a real
bid.
Might
not be real.
But we'll see. But that's good that you were willing to go that high.
Exactly. As far as pick wise, I'm all day defense. I think the safety position. I was going to ask you guys if there's any studs out there, but in my opinion, the safety is the quarterback of the defense. Tyrod had a tough enough time throwing to the quarterback to the receivers we have now. I just don't see another receiver even being in the mix. I want a stud safety. And, again, I don't know who is coming out or if there's anybody out there, but that would be the pick I'd want.
Two guys, Adams from LSU and Hooker from Ohio State, that are the two guys that would be targeted in that area. And, Rick, we'll touch on that here, but I'll let Donald talk. And then Jabril Peppers is the one that is kind of polarizing. I don't think I don't want him at 10.
I don't think you can take him at 10. I mean, he doesn't have, like, a sure position. He's more of a gadget player on defense. Yeah, he's a tweener, right? Like, so if you don't have, like, this guy's a sure corner or this guy's a sure safety, this guy's a sure wide receiver, you just don't know with him. He can play everything, but do you take that guy that high, you know, just because of how good he was in the Big Ten in college? I just don't think he goes that high, number 10. So I could even see him falling, you know, later in the first round, possibly even into the second round, just because of how he plays the position that he plays. But going back to the safeties, we talked about the one kid from LSU. There's a kid from Texas A&M, but there's some depth at safety, and there's one kid that
this is a good draft for it.
It's a good draft for it, and there's a kid out of UConn that played, and he really showed. He raised some eyebrows at the Senior Bowl. And he the name, I can't even pronounce it, so I'm not even going to try.
Oh, yeah, the young man, he has a long name, and I'll get it for you, and I'll try to say it. But I remember Chris Brown trying to say it a few times.
Dude is like 6'4",
right.
You know, 225.
He's a freak.
He's a freak. I think if he blazes a 40.
Doesn't UConn always have these freaks for some reason?
They do.
Marcus Easley,
but
he was
a
freak.
Where did Marcus Peters come from?
Marcus Washington.
Washington, okay. They had another corner, a kid that went to Dallas
in
the first round.
That's right.
That's doing very good for them. They I don't know what it is. They have a lot of kids coming from Jersey. I think that's what it is.
Oh, is that what it is? That must be.
The safety this year, if he blazes a 40 at 6'4", whatever his weight is, I think he's going to move up and surprise people and be in that high second round talk.
It's all about Jersey, baby. They produce the freaks.
Man.
They
Jersey.
Produce the freaks.
Jersey.
Ray and OP. What's up, Ray?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, I haven't heard it. I mean, the big thing with Tyrod is, you know, the shortcomings of throwing over the middle. My question is, has anybody ever asked or found out, is it more from they didn't want him throwing over the middle? Was that more Rex saying, don't throw over the middle so you don't turn over the ball? Or is it more from his shortcomings?
This is something that we talked about a lot. Like, and we were just talking about it when we say we don't know what he's being asked to do. Like, we don't know what they were really asking Tyrod to do. I doubt that they were saying we don't want him to throw over the middle. I think the offense last year was run heavy and a lot of, like, hitch stop routes, comeback routes, things like that. I'm not sure if he can't throw over the middle. I know that he needs to improve in the timing if he wants to be able to throw over the
middle.
But I do think he can get it done.
Throwing over the middle, a lot of timing is involved because there's so many bodies in there.
Right.
And you have to make sure you clear people and you throw it at the right time. And
you got to trust.
He's too late on some throws.
Right.
And that's part of the issue of throwing over the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to trust himself to do that as well. You can throw – if you have a strong enough arm, you know – those 15-yard outs, those are the ones you need those strong arms for. You need
right.
to step into those throws and get them there. But when you're throwing over the middle, man, you got to make sure you got all your T's crossed and all your I's dotted. And that's a hard thing to do for
that's
a lot
hard.
Of quarterbacks. But I'm not saying he shouldn't be able to. He should be able to do it better than he has.
Yeah.
But at this point, I think he's also got it in his head, if I do that, I'll make a mistake. And as we know, Donald, he has been coached not to make mistakes.
Not to make mistakes. And that's the one thing, you know, my father always says, scared money doesn't make any money.
Huh.
Scared money don't make no money. And right now, he's playing with that scared money, you know.
That's
and
right.
so you don't make money when you're playing with scared money. You're not taking a chance. You got to take chances sometimes. And we're not saying we want you to just be a gunslinger, but you have to be able to get it done over the middle of the field because that's your catch and run.
That's right.
Comebacks,
and the Bills
hitches,
have a very poor yards after catch.
Right.
From their receivers.
Comebacks and hitches, all of that stuff is good. And you can turn those sometimes into a big play, but your real catch and run, your yards after catch come throwing over the middle of the field. And so that's why he needs to improve over the middle.
We can't go a whole week without having a call about one particular player in college, and that's exactly who John from Hamburg wants to bring up. John, go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yep.
I just wanted to ask a question about Chad Kelly. I'm thinking maybe the Bills could just say scrap it and rebuild and just take between Cardale Jones and Chad Kelly. I mean, I know how his uncle Jim was so good for Buffalo and he really worked out here. So who knows? Maybe he could be this might be an over-exaggeration, but maybe he could be the Tom Brady type diamond in the rough for us.
We've talked about Chad a lot. We get a lot of calls about him, and there will be a lot of calls about him between now and the draft. And I'll state what I did last week, and I'll continue to say, and that is I think the worst thing that could ever happen for Chad Kelly is to come to the Buffalo Bills.
Right.
I don't think it's the worst thing the Bills could ever do. Yeah, maybe he is a guy that you can develop into something in the NFL. He's coming off an injury. He was a good player in college. We know that his dad is here. He has a legacy here. The family does. But for him personally – and how he's behaved and some of the things that have happened to him. And I think that he's at least on the right track of improving that and being more mature. I agree with that. But I think the best thing for this young man is to not be in Buffalo, New York, around people who are going to enable him.
Listen, Chad Kelly, you know, I know him. We talk sometimes through social media. He trained with us. When I was playing here, he'd come out and train with us. So for me, I really wish him the best. Like, I hope he can come into this league
too.
And just ball out. I really love
seeing people from this area do great. I know Chad as well, and it would be awesome if we're like, hey, man, that kid's from Buffalo. Look what he's doing.
Exactly.
That would be great.
But at the same time, I've heard people compare him to Johnny Manziel, and that is not a good comparison. It's just not a good comparison. It has nothing to do with the skill set or any of that stuff. It's off the field. And at the quarterback position, you can't have those questions off the field because you are the face of the franchise. You are the person that everybody looks to. And so you can't be the one that's in trouble or anything off the field. You can't have people pressuring you for different things off the field, tickets, whatever it is, because you are the quarterback. We need your mind clear. You need to be totally focused on the game. And him being here in Buffalo does not help him because he won't be able to just focus on the game young in his career. If he was to be drafted here, he would have endorsements and all types of stuff just because he's Jim Kelly's
nephew. That's the other part about it, Donald. Even if he had a squeaky clean record off the field, even if Chad Kelly was squeaky clean off the field, to live up to who his dad is in this town, I'm sorry, to
his
who
uncle?
His uncle is
mm-hmm.
in this town, that's it. I don't want to put that pressure on that kid.
You don't.
You can't. He would be immediately expected
to be Jim Kelly.
I think – now, those of us who understand and are logical would not expect that.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of fans would because of the name and who he is and how good he was here.
Right.
And he was the best high school player in this area and
exactly.
one of the best in the state and even in the country
exactly.
coming out of college.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, the best thing for him to me would be to not be here.
Not be here.
And I don't blame the Bills one bit if they say we just can't do that to him and we don't want to put ourselves in that position. Jonathan and Alden, what's going on, Jonathan?
Hey, thanks for the show. I'll respond to your Twitter poll. Yeah, I say yes. I think the Bills should draft a wide receiver at number 10 overall because they lack depth at the wide receiver position, and I'm a little concerned about Sammy Watkins because he just can't stay healthy. So I'm hoping they can find a wide receiver, another wide receiver to complement Watkins and help Tyrod Taylor.
All right, thank you very much. That is Todd McShay's draft. They have the Bills. He has the Bills taking Mike Williams out of Clemson. If Mike Williams got drafted here, maybe someday, Donald, he'd be sporting some sort of team company logo on his jersey.
Maybe.
Because the NBA is doing this.
The NBA is doing it. And trust
NFL
me,
hasn't gone that
it's
way.
It's going to trickle into the NFL and MLB. It's just extra money for them to make. And we all know what these leagues are about. And it's all about making money. And so if I can get an extra whatever, $100 million for having this company on my team, on my jersey, yeah, we're going to do it. You know, so for me,
do you think it's worth it for the company? Do they really get, do you think?
I've always wondered that. I've always wondered, is it worth it to spend that type of money for advertisement, right? Like, really, how much of that are you making back? And I'm sure they have ways of finding that out.
I think in this case it might be, and here's why. Let's say for the NBA, for example, the Philadelphia 76ers, they're going with StubHub. They're going to have a little StubHub logo on their jersey.
Right.
Every time a dude is at the free throw line and they're showing him, that StubHub is on there for like 30 seconds at a time without leaving. That advertising money, think about how much that would cost you if you paid literally per second or per 30 seconds and how many times that's going to happen. I think it's got to be worth it, at least in the market value for how much you're getting exposure.
Right.
The question is, does it actually resonate into product being moved and money being spent?
Exactly. But I mean, just think about it. If you have some fun with it, some of the companies that could be on your jersey, right? It would be hilarious to see some of these companies. Like, wait, that's on their jersey? That's what they decided on?
But if you think about it,
like you think about the Super Bowl itself. You have, if your company's logo is on the team's jersey for the year and that team makes it to the Super Bowl, man, like you're talking about global advertisement that you've really just paid one price for.
That's right. Do you remember the company that was on the back of the Bad News Bears?
No.
You don't remember?
Mm-mm.
Who was on the back? Jay Harris thinks he knows everything, my producer. In our ear, in my ear, do you know the company, the business that was on the back of the Bad News Bears jerseys? He doesn't, does he?
He does not.
Chico's Bail Bonds.
Chico's Bail Bonds.
Chico's Bail Bonds was sponsoring a Little League baseball team. That we don't think they're sponsoring anybody in the NBA right now, but we'll see. Do you ever see some of these these junior hockey teams and stuff? They're like dressed up with logos all over. They're like NASCAR.
Right, exactly. You know? So that's what I'm saying. Like you start off right now, you already have, what, Nike?
Right.
So if you start off now putting other companies, when is the cutoff where you say, okay, you can only have this amount of companies on your jersey? Like, it starts with one.
Uh-huh.
But then if you start to get more and more companies, I want to give you $100 million. I want to give you $100 million. I'm giving you $100. Then you start to look like NASCAR.
That's what it's going to be. And the NBA has started this. We'll talk more about this, if you want, when we come back. But we're taking your phone calls on the Bills and the draft today. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. Plus, kid scored 92 points in a basketball game last night. That actually happened.
Man.
We'll talk about it when we come back.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Were you a basketball player in high school?
No, I ran indoor track.
You would probably tell me, at least on the air, you would have dominated if you played basketball, though, right?
I would have dominated. That's right.
Would you ever score 92 points in a game?
No, because the only way you can do that is if you never play defense.
Maybe that's what happened. LaMelo Ball.
Mm-hmm.
LaMelo Ball. That's a real name. It's a great name, isn't it?
LaMelo.
He needs to be like an actor, not a basketball player. But a basketball player is good for now. LaMelo Ball of Chino Hills in California. 92 points he scored, Donald. In a basketball game. His brother, by the way, LiAngelo.
LiAngelo and LaMelo.
Is the team's leading scorer. Didn't play because of an ankle injury. And he has another brother who I believe is playing for UCLA, correct?
Yes.
I have to look at that.
He does. Now,
Alonzo, is that his name?
Alonzo, yeah. LiAngelo, and LaMelo.
Yes.
Just imagine as their parents saying their names, trying to get that right. Because parents mess up names all the time. They call one kid the next kid, and it's just.
Right.
But just imagine saying those names.
Lonzo Ball. Wow. Lonzo, yeah. He's 15 years old. He's a sophomore.
Yeah, but
92 points in a game.
He didn't play any defense, man. He was cherry picking the whole game. He was like just standing on the other end. They get the rebound and throw it down to him. He makes a layup.
Is that what happened?
That is mostly what happened. He made some good shots. He made some threes and everything like that.
Do you know the final score?
No, what was it?
146-123.
In a high school basketball game?
Yeah.
That is crazy.
92 points.
It wouldn't have happened in Jersey, I'll say that.
Yeah, because you would have been guarding him, right?
No, but there's some good basketball in Jersey. And there's too many good players. Hey, there's no good basketball.
You are selling California short. California is a very good basketball state for high school. Yeah. I remember when Jason Kidd was a high school player in California, because I was in college and we're like, yeah, this kid is going to be amazing. He's going to Cal, and, you know. He wound up doing that, and I remember that. He was a great player.
DeJuan Wagner scored something like 100 points in a high school game one year in Jersey, down in Camden, New Jersey. And he ended up going to Marquette, I believe. And
didn't Cheryl Miller score 100 in a game, too? Reggie's sister?
I believe so. Yeah.
I think she did as
Reggie never got it done, though.
No, he didn't. in a few more ways than one. Brandon in North Tonawanda. Brandon, you're on WGR and MSG on The John Murphy Show. What's up?
Hi, how you doing, guys? Thanks for taking my call. I got a comment and a quick question. I really think we should keep Tyrod Taylor. I think he's done enough to get the starting job next year. I'd also, as far as drafting a quarterback goes, what do you think about Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech?
You know, I've seen a lot of highlights on Patrick Mahomes. I think, first of all, he's huge. The kid is like 6'5", 6'6", something like that. And he has a big arm. He can throw down the field. The problem always, especially coming out of Texas Tech, they've been known for having that just spread, throw the ball 80 times a game type of offense. So does that transition into the NFL? That's the question that's yet to be seen. I don't think he's going to go in the first round. So he could be a quarterback that you take in the second or third round just because of, you know, the style of offense. He's not going to be a guy that goes in the first round.
He does have the physical tools, you think,
he
right?
It looks like
he can make every throw.
Exactly.
He's got a cannon. Mm-hmm. He's pretty athletic, it looks like, right? But I agree with you. Like, you just have he's in an air raid offense. And you know what the air raid offense basically tells all these receivers to do? Run to the fire hydrant and turn around because the ball's going to be there.
It's going to be there.
You're not going to have Patrick Peterson covering you.
That's why it's so hard to evaluate not only quarterbacks but wide receivers and running backs coming out of those styles and linemen.
Right?
The entire everybody. It's so hard to really evaluate these kids now because of the styles of offense. The defense is now, I mean, to play defense and you're playing against these spread offenses, it might make it a little bit better for you because you have to play a lot more in space, right? So if you can guard these guys in space in college, you probably can guard these guys in tighter areas in the NFL. But going back to the offensive side of the ball, as a quarterback, it's tough to evaluate because you're throwing the ball all over the place. You're not reading the entire field. Everything is on signals. There's no play calling in the huddle, any of that stuff that you have to deal with. So you have to learn all of that. Wide receiver, you don't really have to run real routes. You're running all go routes or post routes, things like that. So you have to learn that. And you have to learn just DBs or catching the ball with people all over your back. Linemen are not the same in those types of offenses because – they don't have to do what you have to do here as far as pulling and doing all of that stuff, you know. And running backs, the field is so spread wide open that you're running through virtually untouched.
Some news in the NFL today that is kind of Bills related, by the way. David Lee, former Bills quarterbacks coach, has been hired by the Cleveland Browns to be their quarterbacks coach. And what's interesting about that, Donald, is the Browns, if they don't get Jimmy Garoppolo, which I think everyone's pretty much understanding that they're going to try at least to go after Jimmy Garoppolo. They might not get him, that they're very interested. If they don't, they've been rumored to have interest in Tyrod Taylor if he becomes available. Now they have his quarterbacks coach. That doesn't mean that's why you hired David Lee. It's just like, why did the Bills hire Rick Dennison? Because he was Tyrod's coach and they wanted to get him to work with Tyrod? We don't know that. They hired Rick Dennison, we think, because they think he's a good football coach. It just so happens he coached Tyrod and he'll have a better understanding of him to help make the decision. But it does at least give you some fodder to talk about with David Lee going to Cleveland, if maybe that's a landing spot for Tyrod if the Bills ultimately move on from him.
I know talking to David Lee, when we had him on the show and when you talk to him around the building, you know, he wanted some more time with Tyrod Taylor. He really felt like they could develop Tyrod Taylor into a good passing quarterback in this league. They didn't want to take away from his running ability, but they wanted to add to his passing attack. And I when you talk to him, they always would say, we feel like this guy can really be developed into a very good quarterback in this league. The problem, and David Lee would say this, was that he was always taught not to turn the ball over, you know, and so he wouldn't take shots over the middle. He wouldn't take shots down in the red zone. And that's what they always played, that fine line of telling him not to turn the ball or not telling him not to turn the ball over versus telling him take a shot down in the red zone, right? So it was so hard because somewhere in Tyrod Taylor's upbringing, he was taught protect the ball, protect the ball, protect the ball. Don't throw it into tight windows and stuff like that. And in this league, quite frankly, you have to be able to throw it
no doubt
into tight windows. Sometimes it's going to get picked, others it's not. But you just have to trust your arm, trust the wide receiver to come down with it because of his upbringing. He hasn't developed that yet, though. But David Lee does feel like Tyrod Taylor could be a good quarterback.
And isn't Cardell Jones the opposite of that?
Yes.
Cardell Jones is
more of a gun.
I am just going to throw it to wherever I need to. And yes. Someone said, I can't remember which Bills coach or whoever said, he'll throw it to no matter what, no matter if anybody's open or not. And they have to kind of make sure he kind of reins it in a little bit doing that. But he's the opposite of Tyrod.
When you when you grow up and you're so big, and you're probably bigger than everybody else growing up playing quarterback, you had a very strong arm probably his entire life playing quarterback from Pop Warner all the way up, that he could make throws at those levels and they wouldn't get picked off. And here in this league, you know, he still feels like I'm big. I have a cannon for an arm. I can make that throw. And it's the same thing that Brett Favre dealt with. It's the same thing Ryan Fitzpatrick dealt with. Now, Ryan Fitzpatrick didn't have the same arm strength as Brett Favre or even as Cardale Jones. But because he's that big, because he has that cannon, he feels like I can make that throw. I've been doing it all my life. Why is it different now in this league? And it's just not the same, you know. So he has to develop into reading the field and throwing it to the guy. Well, throwing guys open, but not some windows. Don't take that chance.
No, it's a much different world in the NFL than in college. But Cardale, it's great, I think, to have a guy that is willing to take chances, but, man, you can really get yourself in trouble in this league by doing that, no doubt. Dan in Florida, what's going on, Dan? You're on the John Murphy Show.
Sales, Donald, how are you? Donald, you gave up too soon, man. I wish you would have been playing still right now. I loved you when you were playing.
Hey, man, trust me, I didn't give up. The doctors forced me.
I know, the body gave up. I got it.
Well, listen, and here's the other thing. If he would have kept playing, I don't know if he'd be with us today, so I'm glad he's here. Let's put it that way. So what's up, man?
Well, things I was just going to mention to you guys real quick, because I know I only got so much time, is I really think that Michael Floyd, because I watched him in Arizona closely because of my middle son is a huge Arizona fan, and that's a long story, but whatever. I live in Florida. And he is a fantastic receiver, and he's open after right now, after the Super Bowl. He would be a fantastic addition, big, strong, wide, you know, long arms. And I think that's what Tyrod needs. I mean, if we can draft one of these tall, rangy receivers as well as him, you know, I mean, he was taking guys off the street last year, and they still were seventh in scoring.
This is a tough one for me, Dan, because I'll tell you, I was a big Michael Floyd fan when he was coming out of Notre Dame. I really wanted him. I wanted him to go to the Bills. I was on board with the Bills drafting him. Of course, ultimately, they didn't. He was drafted 13th overall that year by Arizona, 2012. But he's had a disappointing career. Even though he's on a pass-happy team, he's only broken 1,000 yards one time. He's only broken 60 catches one time. But on the other hand, what you say is right, Donald. I think he's going to be a cheaper guy for good talent. I don't know if you can trust him, though. He had the DUI at the end of the year. That's why they released him. He was left inactive for the Super Bowl. For New England, I mean, you know, because they didn't think they thought they needed more special teams help. So, Dan, I'm with you for some of the things you said, but that's a tough sell for me, maybe. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see with him where he goes.
Yeah, but, John, can I just respond to that?
Yeah.
My point is this, is that, okay, yeah, he had less than 1,000 yards. He also was Larry Fitzgerald and John Brown.
That's right.
And a good tight end.
And so you're only going to get so many touches.
Well, the problem with him, though, is he's had a lot of drops as well. The knock on him in his career has been he's been very inconsistent catching the football.
That's true. I agree with you there.
I don't disagree with you, though, that he would – I would love to take a shot at him considering what he might be able to go for, which I think is cheap. I just – it scares me because in the situation they're in with the cap, you can't afford mistakes.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. But thanks. I appreciate the call.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's – been in trouble, which is why he was released. You just think about his year. Now, obviously, he didn't participate in the Super Bowl. He was a healthy scratch for the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's never good when you're a healthy scratch. I just didn't think he fit into that scheme anyway in New England. But they will take a shot on a guy.
Sure.
And if one of their receivers went down, then he might have been playing. I do think that you can get him for a lot cheaper, though, than if he hadn't been through any of that off-the-field stuff. And the fact that he was a healthy scratch in the Super Bowl, like all of that stuff goes into play when you're negotiating with him and you say, listen, you were a healthy scratch in the Super Bowl. You're coming off a serious DUI. So let's just do like a 1 year, prove it type of deal. You stay out of trouble. You prove it on the field. And now you have a solid receiver. He can come here and be, you know, what you're going to pay him. You probably he might even be your number three if you draft one.
Yeah. I'm okay with the kind of receiver that Dan described the Bills need, him being that guy. Like he fits what I would think the Bills could go after, the age, the size, the talent. But, man, I don't know if you can trust him.
And that's the only thing. You can't pay
on the field or off.
You can't pay him as a number two.
He has to
be a number three or even a number four wide receiver that is helping you out.
It's going to be an interesting one to see where he goes. But that is a guy that you could definitely see the Bills maybe at least taking a look at in free agency. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up. Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones here on the John Murphy Show on a Wednesday hump day afternoon.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We learned that Jay Harris knows everything. He is just a fountain of information in our ears. That's what we learned today on the John Murphy Show.
You know, I get that all the time with him. He's always in my ear.
He is
talking about things that he thinks he knows.
Does he have a nickname?
Jamestown Tater.
That's his nickname. Wow. All right. Well, we might start calling him that. All the big producers and all the big TV and radio shows have nicknames. We got to give one to Jay every day we talk about.
The big producers, like, do they always have like beards?
They all have beards and glasses and stuff. That's Jay Harris for sure. We did talk to Paul Domowicz of Philly.com about Terrell Owens not making it into the Hall of Fame.
I mean, I believe strongly that he should be in. He should have been in last year, and he certainly should have been in this year. You know, I can't tell you specifically what goes on in the room, but it's fairly common knowledge that the people that have reservations about him in that room has nothing to do with his on-field performance and everything to do with disruptive behavior. Now, anybody who's covered T.O. or played with him knows he has been disruptive.
All right, let's go out to Mark in Rochester. We only have a few minutes left here, Mark, so go ahead. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Yeah, I was wondering, we're talking about wide receivers, and we had a fellow named Colby Listenby last year, and he just, you know, was not playing and injured, and where is he at, and where does he fit in?
All right, thank you very much.
You know, Colby Listenby is a blazing fast wide receiver. You just don't know what he can do right now because he hasn't played. You need him to be healthy throughout this preseason to have him on the team, obviously. For me, you know, if you're going to keep Marquise, it's tough for you to keep both of those guys because you need to have guys that can get it done in special teams. I don't know if Colby Listenby can run down and make tackles. He's not that big of a wide receiver thick-wise. You know, he doesn't have a lot of muscle to him and things like that. So if he can do that, yeah, you'd love to have blazing fast wide receivers on this team, but you need to be able to get other use out of guys who are not your one and number two, right? So if you're number three and down, you got to be able to play special teams. And if he can't do that, then he has no use on this team.
Here's the danger I want to caution everybody in. I will tell you this, and I said this a couple months ago, maybe at the end of the year. Colby Listenby may be the number one guy I get tweeted about at Sal Sports on the entire roster other than Tyrod. He might be. I mean, I get so many tweets per week about Colby, and I get it, partly because the wide receiver position is so in flux and they need help there that everyone's scratching and searching and wants something, and here's this kid that's right. supposed to have all this speed, and what about him? But here's the problem. Here's the caution I want to give all the listeners and viewers, all right? Colby Listenby should never be expected to come in here and be some sort of savior for that group.
Right.
He is a rookie who's never played a down, and oh, by the way, was a seventh-round draft pick. I think seventh, maybe mm-hmm. sixth. Seventh-round draft pick who's never played a down in this league. Do not expect him to come into this league and start tearing it up and being your number two next to Sammy Watkins. In fact, Donald, he's going to have to fight for a roster spot next year.
He might
not make the team. I mean, I think, given his speed and what they drafted him for, knowing they'd give him a redshirt year, so to speak, the plan is to have him on the team. He could go to camp next year and not impress,
right.
be a practice squad player.
He has to make the team this year.
He's a bubble guy.
Exactly.
So don't do that to Colby Listenby. I think that's unfair to Colby Listenby for fans to think that he's going to walk in and become some sort of starting wide receiver right away. If he does, great. Oh, my gosh, what a great find that would mm-hmm. be. But the plan all along was draft Colby, do not let him play. Get him a redshirt year. He'll have a whole year and a half over the hernia, and he'll be able to come in fresh and start anew. And by the way, Colby's a good kid. I like talking to him, and he's really excited about his chances this year. I like that about him. He thinks he's going to be able to come in and be an impact on this team.
I hope he can. I hope he can too. They need him.
Good job today, man. Thank you. Appreciate it. Donald Jones right there. Sal Capaccio here. John Murphy's going to be along next week. I'll be back for the next 2 days. In the meantime, you have a great hump day.
Hump day!